Well,
there's an actual agenda now that I got last Wednesday, and I was going to give you all a paper copy of it. I'm not sure that Paul put it out. I can send it to you in Word Report on Friday. Honestly, and this was my complaint, the minute that I saw the agenda, is several hundred dollars for 5 hours of meetings spread out over 2.5 days.
Correct.
And I got a real problem with that. That's a waste of everybody's time.
And normally we do it in one day.
Right. And if it was 5 hours of meetings in one day, maybe an overnight because it's in Prescott, I think, which is hard to get to, you know, hard to get to and back in a day, that's fine. But
go through patient.
Well, that's what I always do.
Yeah. Put patient and then up over the
mountain. Yeah, it's a prettier drive.
Minimal drive,
yeah. So, I don't know. You all can do what you want. I'll be there if the group wants to attend. They were also asking if anybody was going to go to the AACRT National Conference.
Yeah.
The rooms alone are something like $600 a night. In the conference. No. I'm not doing that. One, if a board member would like to go.
I have friends in San Francisco.
I used to, but they've moved.
I have a daughter in San Jose.
Close, but probably not drivable.
It's about a 4 hour drive. I don't like San Francisco. You have to watch where you walk.
You know, I went to the National Debate Tournament when I was in high school, and I really enjoyed it then. We took the kids back, like, 3 years ago. Yeah, and it's like plowing away the garbage to get anywhere. It's unbelievable how...
Yeah. The homeless defecate on the street.
Hello, guys.
What can you get?
I'm going to leave it here.
Good morning.
That was pleasant for you.
It was both fun.
I'll leave you all alone.
Michael Lake?
Pardon?
Michael Lake?
No, I wish you had mailed it earlier.
I just had a listening to California last week.
I sure hate
Michael Cobb. Thank you so much. I had done emailed it.
Okay.
Thank you.
No problem.
Yeah, there's parallel. Yeah. Invited me to that meeting, but I couldn't make it.
Okay, all right, just good. I'm glad you invited me. I wanted to know that.
I'm a mountain. Did you knock air?
Yeah, I did.
So this is the information sheet about the conference, and I know you're not going to be there anyway, but if you all, if we want to talk about it briefly in the president's report, that's the agenda.
Oh yeah, okay. Evidently I got a
mailing.
Yeah.
We won't, we'll be safe now.
Okay.
Well, we can give you all the time.
Of course, I'm going to have to hustle here during the middle of the meeting.
Okay. Did you ever get that?
I did have a good time.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy California?
Very cool.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
Is the blanket?
Now, where are your blankets?
Okay.
It's by Loma Linda.
Okay. All right.
San Bernardino County.
Yes. Yeah.
You're all saying, man, you got some fun.
So you enjoyed it?
Well.
Good for you.
Loaded in order, part one, two, and three.
Judas's first.
Okay.
You need to just pull it out, start the slideshow, and they should be able to take it.
How did
all
you
help
with that?
I don't know. I've never been in.
Oh, okay.
I think travel reimbursement problem.
You should have five travel reimbursements in front of you.
I think
you can get signatures for them.
Oh,
I'm all there. The rest.
Compile all the
results. There are the
what you call probably
required
file. Shake everybody up.
For your conflict of interest?
Well, I want to update it. Take a break.
Yes, that's it. The only thing.
File, and then we'll come in.
What was the same?
That one is really
same.
However you want
to get over, you need to get a signature on it. Just for our record.
Yep.
You should have five travel reimbursements.
Okay. No, I have.
I'm just curious.
How are you?
For our trip.
Yes.
Yeah.
The scheme is yours. I have to look up my.
Yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You were probably working. Yes, it is. There are some disadvantages. There are some very distinct advantages.
I was working. We remodeled it and still putting crap away.
You were talking about that.
So, I had us owing you money pages before we got into the business office and see what
that was changed.
No,
I
want
to stucco roof and retile.
I'm struggling now. We have an outside light by the garage.
Yeah.
I was fiddling around with the light bulb, and the glass dropped out.
That can be fun.
So there's two branches. I don't know where.
Sometimes easier to buy new light.
And that's about where we are.
Oh, it's fine.
But I hate to.
No, this is a little
this is where I close. I can't buy a new picture.
It's about the final four.
But we've got four of these pictures. And they're all about
taking the website.
Can you get yourself put on the
board? You're welcome.
Except I have to get scaffolding and everything like they did. We had Jones.
Right now, we repainted it and we had to get scaffolding. It's going to stay that color till I die.
That's where we are on this one. It's going to stay that way.
We got a couple of minutes according to the clock.
Getting close.
Okay, construction.
Okay, he's gonna tell us where we are.
We just lost.
Kind of looks good to me.
Good morning.
Morning.
Morning. We have the work session first with, as usual, two items on the work session agenda. Our first discussion item is an update on the construction of the White House campus, and I'll turn that over to Vice President Ellison and Facilities Director David Beach.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you. Just an update as to where we are in regards to the RFQU. We're still in our selection process. You may recall that we had six vendors who submitted packets for the RFQ and out of those six, we had an evaluation matrix that all of the committee members prepared. We invited four of those people in. They included SPS, DLR, BWS, and Corgan. We felt that those were the people who were truly qualified based on their size and some of their experience, and that was the first interview. We have narrowed it down based on those, the first set of interviews where they did their presentation, and Some were more sales pitch than anything else, but we had an opportunity to ask some questions of the vendors. We are going to host a second round of interviews based on those four vendors. We're hoping to schedule those for July 2nd and 3rd. And of the two vendors that we have identified, one has confirmed and one we haven't heard back from. But that might then be an indication as to where we're going with these vendors. We have not shared the information with the vendor as to who the other vendors are. So the hope is that we can provide them some information about what the expectations for these buildings are in terms of how we use the classroom, what class sizes they may need, what programs are in each building, and information about meeting spaces, office spaces, the like, and share with them what we're thinking and listen to them in terms of what might be available in terms of suggestions. At this point in the RFQ process, we're not able to talk about cost. So once we get past this next round and we have a firm selection of which vendor we'd like to use, then the cost component comes into the equation and we'll start talking about that. So David is here and we can answer any questions that you may have. Okay.
It looks like everybody's quiet for now.
Thank you, Dan.
Congratulations on moving along.
Moving along a little bit slower, but we are moving along. In regards to the construction manager that we had hoped to hire, we had hoped that they would be in place by now. That is certainly not the case. Part of the qualifications that we have required was they were a certified construction manager. We have had only one applicant who met that qualifications out of California, but was hesitant or unwilling to comply with our application process unless he was assured that he was on the short list, essentially. We told him we could not do that. We haven't heard from him since. We've reposted the position, and we have some qualified individuals who've worked in that capacity for many years but may not have a certification, or they have certifications but not necessarily as a construction manager. They may have engineer experience, they may have architectural experience. We even have one project manager who is got credentials in that area. And so we're taking a look at those individuals and reviewing the resumes again and trying to determine who we'd like to bring in for an interview. So we're still trying to select someone. Questions there? The hope is that maybe by August we'll have someone in place. That might be a little too high of a bar at this point.
Is the issue salary?
We haven't even gotten into the discussions about the salary. I just think it's qualified people in the region. And knowing that this is a two to three year position, I'm not sure that people are that interested or those that are interested. If we were able to get to that point, I'm sure the salary is going to be an issue, but we haven't had those discussions at this point.
So is certification requirements is really the main issue, or are you willing to weigh that against versus experience?
Yeah, we're going to weigh that against experience on this next round. So this is honestly the third posting that we have had for this position. There's one garnered one qualified applicant. And we, as a practice, do not just go based on one applicant in the pool. And so we opened it up for the second round, and we got a few more people. And so this is the third opening. The project manager, I think, might have been in the second pool. And certainly, Mr. Hewish has talked to the applicant to just remind him to, you know, this is still a position we're interested in, and if he's still interested, certainly we will retain his application in the pool, and I think so far he has. And so right now it's a matter of getting the applicants that we have, get it up to the committee, and then make some decisions about who we might want to bring in, knowing that we are going to probably adjust how much we weigh on experience versus certification.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I will turn it over to... Dr. Rich Reyes.
Yes.
Let's mark on.
No, that's fine. Our second half of our work session is our update on accreditation from Dr. Rich Reyes.
Good morning, Cameron. Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing great, thank you.
Well, I think last month we didn't get a chance to work on our interview preparation, so I'm going to pick up on some of those and then do a little bit of recap, and then I'll continue to practice the part of you in preparation for that. So, first, we have some new information from HLC, and through that, President Beth already shared with the board the list of the HLC peer review team members. And as you can see, that we have quite a bit of reviewers that are coming from colleges that are similar to ours. They are from many colleges, although there is also one member coming from tribal college and another one coming from a state university at a regional campus. More importantly, when we are looking at this group of peer review team members, there are areas of expertise, and we can anticipate what type of questions and areas that they are more likely to focus on. You can see that in this team list, we have a lot of our reviewers with expertise in the area of assessment of student learning. That's the educational side of it, and also program review, curriculum development. We have also some members focusing on the administrative side, operational side, focusing on finance and personnel, HR on that. But overall, you can see that a lot of the emphasis of this business will be focusing on program review, assessment of student learning. And so the subsequent sessions of our work sessions may spend a little bit more time in that area. And the goal is not so much about having the board to know all the nitty-gritty about that, but in general, it's kind of like give you an overview and also ask you to maybe reflect back on all the district governing board meeting, what area that the college has been focusing on and reporting to you, and what kind of decision, what kind of insight have you provided to the college in those areas. So, any questions about the pre-review team list? Okay. I would emphasize again and again that we in the upcoming comprehensive on-site visit, HLCC reviewer will look at all these five criteria listed here. They will look at to what extent NTC is realizing its mission, and again, what is NTC mission, memorize it, and making sure that we know what it is when they are asking us. To what extent is NTC acting with integrity? How are we doing our operation, how we're providing our service to students and also to the community. Criteria 3 and 4, focusing on teaching and learning. And criteria 3 is focusing more on the resources that we have available. Criteria 4 is focused on to what extent we assess whether our structure, our process are sufficient in providing students what they need in order to accomplish their educational goals. Criteria 5 focuses on planning and allocation resources. Again, please keep those things in mind, and I appreciate that the board has already had a chance to review the assurance argument in the month of April and a little bit on in May, and giving some input. The college also has some input on the initial draft, and right now the draft has been sent to our editing team. Our editing team has three professors from the English department to helping us to even make it better. In our April retreat, we spend some time to look at the board's role in strategic planning. So some of you already kind of seen some of these questions and attempt to kind of like share that. So I'm not going to go over that, but if you have any questions and, you know, you want more information about any of those, please let me know and I'll organize the material for you and I'll help you to prepare your answers when you're asked by the peer review team during our visit. So now we are getting into some of the oversized roles that the board is likely to be asked by the team, by the your team members. First thing is, this one is challenging one, but it's, I think a lot of times we focus in on fiscal oversight. So if you were kind of approached by a pre-review team member and asked these questions, what would be your response? Most of the time, you tend to kind of provide a generalized response, oh, this is what the board do. But it may be also helpful to give them more specific examples. So for example, if, let's say I'm the pre-reviewer, and I ask, like, okay, how does the board provide fiscal oversight to NDC? What would be your answer?
We ask Maria.
Might I look at information? You guys do review the monthly financials every month. You do get information from the Auditor General on an annual basis about our audit. You do review purchases above a certain threshold related to our supply and material capital items. So those are just a few examples of the oversight you provide monthly.
We knew that answer. I was being facetious when I said it was looking. But in just speaking for myself, I think that the staff, the financial staff, do a fantastic job in telling us more than we could ever ask. I mean, the level of detail that we have, and this is based upon policy that's been in place for years, but the level of detail that we get is fantastic. That's the only word that appeals me. I can only speak for myself, but I suspect that everybody here on the board appreciates how much information we get. We're not on sensory overload, but we're approaching it. But I personally appreciate it, and the level of feedback that we get from our auditors as well, which is very, very good. And so even though I'm not a finance person, I would almost say I can understand it. I understand exactly where we are. And when we ask a question, I remember the chair asking a question, well, how close is this compared to the year before and so forth? Those kinds of questions, and all of that information is provided in such an understandable way that, well, of course, Elias, that's what he does for a living, but I can understand it. And if I can understand it, anybody can understand it. Speaking only for myself.
Go ahead.
I personally appreciate the monthly reports as far as revenues and expenditures, the year-to-date information about where we are, how much we spent, how much we had in revenues for the period, and how it compares to budget. So that's very important month to month. We appreciate it.
So thank you for your response and kind of like sharing with us on that. I think a lot of times when the HLC reviewers kind of like asking this type of questions, what they're looking for is in general, first begin with the process, the structure, to what extent does the college provide you with the information? How often do you receive the information? So exactly like what E.C. Allison saying that on a monthly basis, you get a chance to see the report. And not just that, she explained in detail in a language that what I understand, I'm not a financial person, I understand that. So in a way that you can make decisions, you can ask questions. So that's one thing. So annually, she gave that summary. She also presented the auditor's report. And then also, every year, we went through the budget hearing process, all those things. So they want to hear the process first, and then, you know, if you can provide specific information about there are certain issues that may be challenging to the college. How do you decide? How do you ask for information? How do you ask for clarification in terms of providing more appropriate guidance to the college? So that aspect of fiscal oversight, that's probably what the peer review will want to hear. The more examples that you can recall during the time, the better in that way. So, but these are the things that normally they were kind of looking for. It's not necessarily with an degree, but I remember that during the retreat, the April retreat, the board asked for clarification and the college to work on the purchasing policy. That's a major aspect, and you know, so something that you can share if you would like to the reviewer. So giving some examples. So because we do a lot of fiscal oversight type of activities in almost every monthly meeting, the emphasis is already there, and it's very structured. And we move forward those oversight categories quite efficiently. So the next thing I want to kind of focus on is the educational side of it. The educational side, actually they are multiple, and I'm just going to begin to start with one of them, and then later on we'll have opportunity to talk about another one. And I hope that to use today's time to focusing more on the assessment of student learning. And in some other work sessions, I would like to kind of focus more on the program review. And then again, if you have any questions related to this area, please let us know, and then we will organize the material to help you to kind of understand more about that. And also at the same time, as I want to kind of encourage all of you, is that you are doing it all along. You're really doing it all along. It's just that how we're going to prepare our response, our answer, or our way to share with the peer reviewer, it's what we are preparing here. So in terms of educational oversight, there may be times that the peer reviewer may ask, can you show us what is the very good balance in terms of the time that you spend in your board meeting on academic issues versus financial issues, including budget. How will we approach that subject in that way?
We have a lot of interface beyond board meetings. And I think to simply concentrate on what do we do during board meetings, well, it's 2 hours a month. It's visits to, in preparing for the work in the White Mountain campus, as an example. We went down to see how the welding program in White Mountain campus was working or not working, as the case might be, how the auto mechanics, all of those sorts of things were working or not working, and we clearly saw that there was a need for a significant upgrade in the infrastructure to provide the facilities so that the education could occur, and we now have a major program to upgrade the facilities. So I think that goes beyond what happens here. We go to the NATC site, we go here, we go there. And we, when the kids in the White River have their construction program, we go to do that. So these are things that are over and above that 2 hours a month, 11 months out of the year.
We're off on July, right?
But so it's not just budget, it's not just board meetings. I guess that's the point that I'm trying to make, that we have a lot of input beyond that. And so I think that that point should be made when and if a question is asked.
Yeah, I agree totally with you.
She's my spokesperson for the retreat at the review. Love that.
I think sometimes we do have to kind of remind the people that there are a lot of things that, that the board has done behind the scenes. Activities that kind of like do, that they have the knowledge that just because they can see, because all the public minutes, public meeting minutes are posted on NPC website, they can access that. But there are also other things that that they need the board to share with them, the kind of work that you do outside of the district government board public meetings. So I think that will be a very good example to share with them, that you have like visitor site visits, you know, understanding the program, talk to the instructor, sometimes talk to the students about those things. And so that that will do good. And then it's responding to that. How do board members learn about their fiduciary responsibility for monitoring student learning outcomes? That question has some assumption there that the board needs to know about what are some of the student learning outcomes that the NPC has, and just we have to kind of like.
Well, we get reports from the faculty and from the president that are in significant detail about student outcome.
You also get annually the Vision 2020 statewide data and the college's data and how the college compares to the other community colleges in the state. That, if you remember, that's something that all the community college district governing boards in the state several years ago agreed to participate in as a way to benchmark just not our activities against ourselves over time, but also against our sister colleges over time.
I haven't seen that.
In the past, we usually get some kind of information or comma at the state level, which is a lot more critical than the people here on the campus or locally. The state issue is something that whatever they ask, whatever they have concern about, we used to get those, but we don't get that kind of feedback
right
over here.
Those really ended when the state board for community colleges was dissolved, and part of what has replaced that is this annual report that looks at, for example, what are our math and English completer rates, B.P. Jackson, compared to the other, to the state, what are our adult basic education completer rates, and you can talk a little bit about
that. Yeah, and if you remember the 2020 report that we did, I mean, it showed that our English composition completer rates are much higher than other colleges throughout the state, as well as our math 152 and public college algebra, kind of the gateway to earning an AA and transferring to university. So we're doing well compared to other community colleges in that area as far as student completion.
But Mr. Peaches, we won't see that kind of data from the state anymore because of the lack of a state board.
Right.
And that's, so if we're going to look at any kind of statewide performance data for the community colleges, it's really something we have to do ourselves. The state's not going to do it for us.
So when we're going back to understand
student
learning outcomes, this is a little bit different than when we're talking about student performance or completer rates. Like, you probably heard about what extent of students enrolled in the fall, continue to enroll the next semester. That will be one indicator that kind of kind of like gauge into to what extent students are persisting and successful. The successful course completion rate is another indicator. Retention rate, and of course you hear about completion rate. But what we're talking about here is the assessment of student learning outcomes. So sometimes you may hear from other colleges sharing that just because of the fact that their colleges have a higher completion rate, that does not mean the student be able to learn the things that the particular college wants them to learn. So we hear that from colleges and universities, you know, all over the United States, will set up their own institutional learning outcomes or each of the programs they have their distinctive learning outcomes. So coming back to you, NPC, what are some of the student learning outcomes that we could focus on, that we have been focusing on? And I will continue with this list of questions, and then at the same time, as I do, we definitely will need more time to tackle this. So the next time we meet, likely to be August. We will focus more on that because it's just synchronized into something that we will be talking more about. What is the process of student learning assessment at NPC? How often does the board receive updates about student learning outcomes? Now, I'm not talking again about retention rate, completion rate. I'm talking about to what extent our students have a, let's say, adequate level of critical thinking. Have an adequate level of effective communication skills. You know, examples like that. What are some of the actions that the board has taken after the teacher? So something to think about next time when you meet. To what extent does the board use those information to inform budget decisions? Now that's not just at the board level, even at the department level, but these are some of the questions that we may face from our peer reviewers. Something kind of like we will talk about in this meeting. NPC has emphasized on the general education values for all of our students. And therefore, all the departments and programs are encouraged to choose at least one of these six NPC general education outcomes. As you can see that they are very broad. Critical thinking, critical inquiry, effective communication, quantitative reasoning, scientific inquiry, information, literacy, and diversity. And then next meeting, we'll dive into that more. And just a preview here. Want the board to kind of know about how NPC as a college conducts the assessment of student learning outcomes. So we have a process, and faculty are heavily involved in this assessment process. And in August, our chair of the Assessment of Student Knowledge of Committee, Dr. Anderson Levy, will provide an annual summary report to the board regarding our academic year 2018 and 19 assessment activities. So I'm going to stop here. Any questions? Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, that concludes our reports for the work session today.
Adjourned. We have a second before we need to start up.
Yeah.
I think it was on that bag. I don't remember. He might have been in the car. But if he was in there, he might look. Maybe it may not. We have ID numbers. And it's on the badge, right?
No. We don't get those. You don't want to advertise your ID.
Okay. In that case, will you put it on the form for us, or do we have to ask you to fill it in?
I'll fill it in.
Okay. You're supposed to know everything. That's in the job description.
It makes you feel any better. I had to get a new one about 8 months ago, and I can't remember it. I still know my old one, but I don't know.
All he's really looking for is a signature. Your asset searching amongst your friends.
What?
Our ID number.
Do we have a scramble? Okay, we're ready to go. Good morning. Would you all please join me in the pledge? I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And our next item is adoption of the agenda.
Mr. Chairman, I would move adoption of the agenda as presented.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Starting on my left.
Aye.
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 Motion carries. Call to the public for public comment. Is there any?
Unless the public. No comment.
No comment. All yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have a number of reports on the regular agenda. The first report is the monthly financial position from Vice President Ellison.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman, members of the board. The financial information that is included in the packet now contains what is it, 8 months worth of excuse me, 10 months worth of activity. So we our target is 83%. We have here the general funds, and you'll notice that the state appropriations that we get from our revenue from the general fund have all been received, and so those amounts are listed as 100%. Investment earnings, you'll see that as 691%, so we have far exceeded our investment budget. And as a result of that, our total revenues on a year-to-date basis is 96%. That compares to last year at 83%. But also last year had not had the last fourth quarter state appropriation included. If it had been included, it'd be close to 90%. And so we are above where we expected on the revenues. The expenditures, which is largely our staff personnel, is at 74%, which is the same as it was last year. We have the same number of vacancies in some areas, and so we're still dealing with those. But we do have available funds from this general fund. The unrestricted plant fund is far below what we anticipated in terms of expenditures at this time. This, again, is related to a different strategy, different direction related to some of our technology plans. So as those are firmly put in place in the upcoming year, this will turn around Also, we have anticipated revenues of $11.4 million. Of that, $6.6 million was related to the White Mountain facilities. And so we are aware that this is now delayed from what we had planned originally at this time last year. And so that will then just be returned to fund balance and made available for those activities in the upcoming several years. The next fund is the restricted fund. The restricted funds, again, are in line with what we had anticipated last year. We get this trued up at the end of the year, so the last 2 months that remains in this fiscal year, we'll see accruals related to some of those revenues. We'll see the expenditures coming in. Expenditures are a little bit higher than what we had planned for salaries and wages in this fund. We had some additional grant monies that came in after we had developed our budget. So we did not transfer some of those contingency funds in to cover that. And that's something we will do in the future. But we do have adequate funds to cover those additional grant requirements. For the auxiliary funds, this is an area that we will continue to monitor in the next year as it relates to our bookstore activity, which is the largest component in here. We have seen continually over the last several years a decline in the particular partner that we work with. And so students are just more savvy about finding the least cost textbooks. And so that is nothing that we would expect differently from them. We want them to find those cheap books for them. And so as we continue to evaluate what we're doing with the bookstore, we will certainly share that information with you. On the cash flow perspective, we're at $33 million for inflows, outflows 25.6, leaving us a net balance of about 7.5. How that compares with this time last year, we had about $30.4 million in inflows, $26.1 million in outflows for a balance last year of about $4.3 million. So we're doing much better here, and you can see where that investment income has a big impact. So on the property taxes, again, the current year is the purple. We are still in line with where we anticipated this year to be. We have two more months of activity, but they're going to be light activity. And we have achieved nearly 100% of all of our revenues each year that we have done the property taxes, and don't expect anything more. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you. Director Wilson is on leave this week. She has no report from MPC Friends and Family. Our new president of the MPC Faculty Association, Professor Shafterly, is here for the Faculty Association.
Hello. I have another meeting since May because of summer, but at our May meeting, the Faculty Association voted to put forward a nomination for Kenny Keith for emeritus status. Mr. Keith falls 1 year short of automatic emeritus status, but he has really benefited the college. He was the coordinator of the Industrial Maintenance and Operations program. He was instrumental in starting the mechatronics program and providing additional leadership. He has selflessly and much to the joy of the rest of the Faculty Association been treasurer for many, many years of the Faculty Association. And we feel that he has earned this through his 13 years of service. So we'd like to put him forward for emeritus status.
And as you know, we'll address that later in the agenda. You have a human resources report in front of you, and Director Rediger's here. We'll be happy to answer any questions you may have. No questions. I'd like to briefly introduce the new president of the Classified Administrative Staff Organization. Would you like to come forward and say hi to everyone? This is Rebecca Hunt. I will let Rebecca introduce herself.
Hi, I'm happy to be here, and I don't know if I'm officially the new president yet.
Of course not.
I have a month or two before I step into that role. But I am vice president, and vice president in our group is president-elect. So that means I take over a month or two or three.
13 days.
Oh, I take over in 13 days. So that's good to know. sneaks up on you, doesn't it? So we don't meet during the summer months, so maybe that's where I'm thinking. I don't actually officially take over until August. But, yeah, I'm Rebecca Hunt, and I'm a recruitment specialist. You've seen me up here before presenting the alumni award. We don't have a lot to report right now because we don't meet. We already reported on the scholarship, which we awarded last month, or the month before. And we are gathering donations for the silent auction to be held in conjunction with the August convocation. And that's about all, unless you have any questions for me. Okay, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. We have a slightly longer report than normal today for the NCC Student Government Association. In place of the Student Government Association today, we actually have Lori Moore from the College's Phi Theta Kappa Academic Honorary. And Ms. Moore would like to report out on a trip that Phi Theta Kappa officers took to the International Convention in Orlando. I'll turn it over to Lori Moore.
Good morning, President Hess, members of the Governing Board, and the College Administration. My name is Lori Moore. I'm honored to present on behalf of Phi Theta Kappa, Alpha Gamma Tau. I would like to tell you a little bit about my experience at MPC. For the last 17 years, I've worked in the retail industry as a cashier, a new hire trainer, and a bookkeeper. My job provides our family health benefits and to maintain those I need to work full-time. But to move forward financially and in my career, I needed a bachelor's degree. So 3 years ago, I returned to school. To improve my skills and open opportunities in my current career, I began by completing the Western Association of Food Chain Retail Management Certificate and the Leadership and Management Certificate here at MPC. I earned both of those in 1 year. Upon completion, I was asked by Jennifer Bishop to sit on the Northland Pioneer College Business Advisory Committee representing the retail industry. Volunteering on this committee for the last 2 years has allowed me to provide a unique perspective, both from my education and my industry experience. At MPC, I continue to take classes to transfer to the university for my bachelor's degree in business administration. My second year at MPC was extremely challenging. I was working full-time and taking between 6 and 12 credit hours each semester. That intensified when I was required to take algebra and calculus after 30 years of no math. Next, so calculus, because of my school schedule that year, I also had to take statistics and accounting, or wait a whole year until those classes were offered again. The combination of classes and full-time work found me wondering if I would pass calculus. I was spending more than 20 hours a week just on calculus and felt very alone. A very special lady noticed and offered her help. Bessie Allen Wilson offered her husband help as well in calculus. I'm sure he was like, what? I did not gain profound skills in calculus that day, but what I did gain was hope and the motivation to search again for additional tutoring. A new calculus tutor was available on the Sholo campus, an hour from my home. I convinced my employer to let me adjust my work schedule, and I drove that distance twice a week for 14 weeks, using vacation hours to make up the hours I needed to keep my health benefits at work. This challenge taught me that I was not alone, to be creative with all of my resources, to give it all I had, and then pray for the help that I needed and move forward and never give up. Jennifer Bishop has also taken a critical role in my success at MPC. As a business major, she has often been my instructor. She provides constant encouragement, helped me to learn new skills to succeed, and pushed me to take advantage of opportunities like being a member of the business case competition team representing MPC at the University of Arizona last spring. With the support of so many faculty, administrators, and advisors, I graduated this last May with an Associate of Applied Science in Management Leadership and will transfer to NAU in the fall.
Becoming a member of Phi Theta Kappa was a goal for me from the time that I had my first advising appointment and was told about the benefits of PTK membership. However, getting an invitation would prove to be a challenge as well. Even though I maintained a 4.0 GPA semester after semester, I did not receive an invitation. Last fall, I decided to make one final attempt to contact PTK. April Horn was the new advisor. I contacted her and expressed my interest in PTK. She responded promptly, and within several weeks, I had an invitation and began attending meetings. My last semester at MPC, the PTK student leaders and advisors, April Horn and Dr. Susan Hoffman, gave me the opportunity to serve as secretary for our chapter, and with other students to attend the PTK regional two-day conference at Rio Salado College in March. I was also asked to serve on the committee that would write the grant to request the opportunity for PTK to attend Catalyst in Florida. That's their national convention. Betty Ann Wilson again volunteered her time to teach us how to write a grant, and she kept with us through the whole process. Our grant was approved. Catalyst was an amazing experience, filled with 4 days of classes and inspirational speakers. We learned how to grow our chapter and improve what we had to offer for the students. Upon returning from Catalyst, we created PowerPoint presentations and a database that is composed of all of the notes and recommendations for application of the information that we learned at Catalyst. This is made available to advisors, future leaders, and members of our chapter to increase membership and to plan future activities. This will ensure that the information we learned at Catalyst will not be lost and will benefit the chapter going forward. MPC's chapter of Phi Theta Kappa, Alpha Gamma Tau, its biggest challenges are increasing awareness among students, faculty, and administration, and unifying students across 9 campuses. Membership in Phi Theta Kappa is more than an academic recognition. In order to truly offer all of the benefits of leadership, scholarship, fellowship, and service opportunities to students at MPC, we need to increase active membership. Active membership in PTK has enriched my MPC experience through leadership opportunities and skills learned to help me succeed while serving in the chapter. I received the All Arizona Academic Tuition Waiver that will pay my tuition to NAU for the remainder of my bachelor's degree. And it is PTK's goal to increase our active membership by 20% this next academic year so that we can offer all of these benefits to the students at Northland Pioneer College. We appreciate your past support of our chapter, the opportunity that we had to attend Catalyst in April, and we look forward to working with you in the future to best serve the students of Northland Pioneer College. Are there any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you for your time today.
I have a question.
Yes.
You took calculus.
Yes, I did.
Have you ever used it?
So far, I'm really good at accounting, but math is a totally different story. And so it was very challenging. And probably most of what you learn in calculus, there will be a computer program that will help me to do it on the job. So, and that's my hope.
Well, I have to share with you that when I was in school, I had to take calculus and advanced calculus and differential equations and all of these other things. And in 40 years of practice, I never used it once.
That's actually really good news, sir.
So, taking it and passing it is a wonderful goal and a wonderful accomplishment, but you're never going to use it. I just don't be disappointed.
Well, it's definitely a challenge.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a nice afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's the end of the reports on the agenda.
Our next item is the consent agenda.
Mr. Chairman, I will verify on a Bible, if necessary, that I in fact read the May 21 TNT hearing minutes. I read the May 21 budget hearing minutes. I read the May 21 special board meeting minutes. I read the May 21 regular board minutes. And I would move, as a result of that effort, that the consent agenda be adopted as presented.
Second. We have a motion and a second, starting on my left.
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have no old business. The first item is new business. As noted earlier, you have before you a request from the MPC Faculty Association to to approve emeritus status for Kenny Keith. I concur in that recommendation and would ask the board to vote in favor.
Mr. Chairman, we have the request to approve emeritus status for Kenny Keith. I think an awful lot of people know and appreciate all of the things that he's done, even though his golf game sucks. Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned that. I would move that the request as presented be approved by the board.
I second that request.
We have a motion and a second, starting on my left again.
Aye.
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 Motion carries.
Presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have a little bit of difficulty, which I've already informed Professor Keith of, with the presentation of his emeritus award, which is that it is on a FedEx truck. The original one we requested last week was shipped by ground instead of air, which we specifically requested that it be shipped by air. So HR was frantically made a second request for a second award to be shipped by air. We were promised it would be here yesterday. It's still not here. For all we know, it is in downtown Holbrook being driven in circles right now. We're not sure exactly where it is. So, President Chatterley,
yes.
You may do a presentation to Professor Keith, however you see fit.
All right. I am a inventor doodler. So, Kenny, I'm going to present you with this lovely picture of a snake, which is in, if you would like to come up.
Kenny, would you come forward, please?
Which is in a substitute of your lost eagle. And really, it's a metaphor for work, isn't it?
I like to think of this, Kenny, as an indication of how little we want you to leave. And Kenny, please get with HR Director Redinger. She will work with you separately. And we thought about delaying. Who knows? It may show up in the next 5 minutes.
I am working on my golf game.
Kenny, in all seriousness, would you like to take an opportunity to talk to the board or your friends in attendance today?
I would. Thank you. I appreciate this. This means the world to me. We have my family here, and I'm an emotional person anyway. The president knows that. Peggy knows that as well. But this has been great. This has been a fun ride, I should say, fun journey. I never dreamed, starting out as that young faculty teaching business courses, that I'd be here today. You know, helping change lives with the help of the NPC. You know, I've been trying to keep account. I called it my Where's Waldo. In a file. 226 students I've helped get on the power plants throughout the country. So, that's a lot. That's a great thing. And what I'm going to miss is seeing my granddaughters every week in St. John's. I've watched my granddaughters grow up, just little kids. They're the ones that really took it the hardest. I did. You get a gift card, you know, to keep it going and whatnot. Again, thank you so much. NPC is a family, and I hope I'll always be a part of NPC. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very briefly, a couple of comments about Kenny. I've worked with Kenny for a long time. I'm not sure that the words "no, I can't do that" are in his vocabulary. I never heard Kenny refuse to volunteer an assignment, no matter how much he was already doing. I never heard him refuse to work with a student or drive and get to wherever the student was to meet them on their terms and their location. I've also never heard him turn down a request from the community. And Kenny, this is outside of everything you've done for NPC. I've never heard you turn down a request for help from the community either, and that speaks well of you as a person. So thank you for everything.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair. Our next item is a presentation report from our Small Business Development Center, who have a guest with them, I believe. SBDC Director Mancuso is here.
Thank you, President Vest. Good morning, Governing Board.
Morning.
Mr. Chairman, President Vest. My name is Tracy Mancuso. I'm the Director of the Small Business Development Program here. We're partly grant funded and partly funded by matching funds from NTC for the sole purpose of helping small business owners start a business, grow a business, sustain a business, or transition to either sell or move the business through exit planning forward. So why is this important? Because our small businesses up here are about 95% of the jobs that are created. So we see entrepreneurship as involving job facilitation, a way for people to kind of make a living outside of getting a traditional college education or through the trade. So we have goals because we're grant funded in order to keep that going from the SBA. And one of the things that happened this year that I'm so excited about is that after many years of partnership and many years of discussion, we've been able to partner with the governor's group, which is the Arizona Commerce Authority, and I'd like to introduce you to Robert Theobald, who is the ombudsman for the Arizona Commerce Authority, and he'll tell you a little bit about this new partnership that we have.
All right, good morning, everybody. Thanks for letting me come up here and attend a meeting and talk about the Arizona Commerce Authority. I guess I'd be quick for works on this.
Let me get you to this.
Oh.
Now you can.
All right. So how many of you have heard of the Arizona Commerce Authority? Have you heard of the Department of Commerce? That's what it was called a number of years ago. In 2011, it became the Arizona Commerce Authority. It's a public-private company. It's a private company in terms of the way it runs and operates, public company using public funds. Governor Ducey sits on the board. Sandra Watson is our CEO. And the focus is attracting business to Arizona. So who we are essentially the state's economic development engine, focusing on the state. We focus on bringing quality jobs to Arizona in many different industries. We have teams that work on attracting new businesses. So, for example, if you heard in the news, we have Nikola and Lucid Motors, two high-tech automotive companies that will be building vehicles in Arizona. Those are two recent ones that have come up. Nikola was named one of the top business deals in economic development last year. And we're really excited about that as a state because we're going to bring a lot of attention to the state. But oftentimes, you know, people focus on, think of all it is doing for Maricopa County, but we're not. We're going to talk about some of the details on that. But our goal is to attract, expand, and create jobs in Arizona. And it's kind of hard to read the strategic framework, but we have strategies that base around the attraction and growing and creating business. And we want Arizona to be the best place for business. And again, Arizona, not just the two main, the big counties, but the whole state. So in our five-year goals, create 80,000 jobs, grow wages to 150% of the median average wage in 2017. From 2017, increase our capital investment, grow our entrepreneur vitality, be known as a great state for entrepreneurs, and increase our exports. So these are just on the screen the list of some of the key markets. You can see there's a lot of high tech stuff. When you look at the exports, you know, those are areas that we export to and have a focus on exporting. And, you know, some people will call California another country, like the other areas listed, but California is a major economic powerhouse. You know, their economy is one of the largest in the world, and they're next door, and we can send a lot of stuff and sell to them over there. So we can sort of, you know, anything going out of the state to export, whether it's to California, New Mexico, Utah, Colorado, anywhere else in the country, or in some of the foreign countries. So some of the key results is, since 2011, we worked on 705 projects, created 100, these numbers are a little higher now, so we can definitely say it was over 120,000 new jobs, with over $13 billion in capital investments. And then the direct and indirect jobs created by all that investment and projects is over 272,000, with an economic output of $164 billion. So we're working really hard to drive those results. And, you know, if you've seen on the news, I follow Governor Ducey, is very pro-business and trying to help increase the business climate, improve it in Arizona, and it's showing up in some of the accolades that we've got in the state. So he's just showing some of the things, and I didn't bring my eyeballs, so it's kind of hard to read and memorize them, but our university programs and college programs of the state are definitely making an impact to the point where ASU has been named the most innovative university in the country 4 years in a row. And that if you think about it, that beats MIT and Stanford. So our university down there, ASU, and U of A and NAU, they're all great universities, churning out very high quality talent on the levels of some of these schools that you think, oh, well, we can't match that. Well, we beat that. We beat it here in Arizona. And there's all kinds of great programs. You know, and it's thanks to teachers like Kenny getting recognized for that impact. 270-some students in power plants around the country. That's awesome. And it's the impact of those teachers that are driving those students to be successful. So we're seeing that in many different accolades that we're getting from the effort of the state. But rural Arizona, how does that impact us? So in the rural projects, we've seen over 7,500 jobs with an average salary of over $50,000 and over $2 billion in capital investments. We've got co-op advertising funds for different areas, infrastructure grants, and then some impact analysis studies. So here's a list of five key initiatives. The forestry initiative, Nova Power is taking advantage of some of that, which is great. The Arizona Asset Map is another great tool that can help the communities get their assets that they have listed, whether it's a vacant industrial warehouse. You know, the asset map, if someone's looking, it might fit the need. They're going to realize, oh, it's right next to, you know, a major interstate. Easy transportation access. Workforce development is a key focus. Smart borders, and then broadband. And we have a new broadband director that works under the Rural Development Group. And he's working real hard to really make the impact. The government really pushed on that too to improve the broadband throughout the state. So one of the things that Tracy mentioned that's a really big focus, and the reason I wanted to come up here today, is to talk about the ACA Arizona Small Business Development Center partnership. So the Arizona Commerce Authority and the rural FDDC locations have partnered up, and it's the first time in the history of the FDDC network that the state has partnered with them to provide some funding. And the focus is on the rural locations so that they can provide additional services, more service to those communities to help those communities grow. As Tracy mentioned, a large part of the rural communities are small businesses. Most small communities aren't attracting Google or Apple coming with 1,000 jobs in a giant warehouse, so we got to grow that organically from within, and the Small Business Development Centers really help with that. And the way the funding structures are set up and the way some of the things, they have some limitations on what they can do with their current funding. And so with the funding we're providing, it allows them to kind of stretch and expand the way they can market and do other events and help drive that knowledge into the community that they're there. A lot of people don't know that there's an awesome resource in the community to help their business start, grow, develop, and they'll help in every different aspect. It may be an idea you've got, you want to know how to get started, they can help with that. You may be an existing business, been open for 10, 15 years, and you're just trying to get by, but you want to do more. You want to grow it, you want to develop it. They can help with that and help guide. And I like to look at the small business development centers and your personal trainer. You know, if you go to the gym and you get a personal trainer, it's proven you'll have more success at the gym. Business the same way. If you have a third party that's not in your business but helping you with it, you're going to have success. Every major CEO throughout the country, they have an advisor they talk to. They have a coach of some sort. Tony Robbins, you see him on TV, he shows up and he coaches a lot of them. Well, they do have a coach. They have someone to help guide them. And small businesses can have that too, and it's definitely going to help their success. So with that, some of the things that we're going to do to help, besides the funding, is we're going to be doing training with the SBDC to help them understand better what tax credits the state provides for businesses and how they impact in the rural community, because there are different standards from metro to rural on requirements, and it makes it easier for the rural communities to achieve some of those tax credits. We have the Arizona Manufacturing Extension Partnership, ACMEP, and it's a federal program that helps manufacturing businesses, small to medium-sized manufacturers, be able to improve and scale their business if that's what their desires are, or if they're going to relocate and redesign their layout, they can help with that. They have a lot of quality programs that they offer to help those manufacturers grow and expand. Exports, we have an export specialist in-house in the ACA, and we're going to teach them about some of those programs that they offer to help those businesses export their goods and services. I was just talking to a business yesterday in Flagstaff that they make coolers, they're called candy coolers. And they're a small business, they have a warehouse there, been open for years, but they're not selling stuff in Mexico, and he's extremely interested in doing that. And so we're going to get connected to them with this program and learn how to get their product exported because it's a similar product. And then workforce, we have the Office of Economic Opportunity and access to the workforce development program, and we're going to teach them some of those things so they know some of the resources they have available to help find workforce benefits for them in the area. So it's a really exciting time with the small business development centers and helping them grow and expand, and they're an absolute resource for the community to manage stuff. So the other thing I mentioned is the asset map. I kind of talked about that already. It's a great tool for the community. ACA hosts that on our website. And it does include Opportunity Zone, but you've heard that catchword. It's got a checklist legend so you can highlight certain things and see how they overlap. Film and digital media is also part of the ACA, and it's a huge thing for the rural communities because people want to come to Arizona for our culture and our uniqueness, and downtown Phoenix is not unique. If they want downtown, they got plenty of downtown they go to. But in the outskirts of Arizona, we have lots of opportunities. You can see this with the number of projects we've worked on in 2017. It's over 300 projects in 2019. They're extremely active, and it's a very beneficial program. Now, you see on the side, there's a little note there for real savings. That is a program that we've developed that through the Film and Digital's website on our agfilm.com. Small businesses can go in and register, so when someone wants to do some type of film production in the area, they can look at that registry and say, oh, hey, here's, this salon has some makeup experts, so have people know how to do makeup and hair and so forth. they can be makeup artists. Or if there's a contractor that can build homes, they can build sets. And if they can produce, have people locally that can do that work, they don't have to bring them in from out of state, helps the local economy as well. And then the real savings initial part is there's discounts that, that some of those businesses can offer to the film industry when they come out, specifically for those projects, and it creates immediate savings when those producers are looking at budgets and where they want to go. If they know, hey, I need these discounts here right now instead of waiting for some tax credit that comes when the whole project's done, they can take advantage of that. So there are great programs that have been developed that really can help the smaller communities throughout the state. So we talked about exports. We have Export Tech and Navy Staff programs that can help the small community or the small businesses in the rural communities develop and grow their businesses. And then our local client success. So when I put Case Supply, it's actually KSI Metals, which is part of Case Supply. Some of you may know them. I'm going to let Tracy talk about them because they are a true success story with our partnership.
So, would it be okay if I pass these around for you? This is some information about how economic impact is being created in your backyard. These are the goals that we have for our grants and where we are with fulfilling them. But one of the things that I wanted to talk about was our Success Award winner for last year, which was KSI Supply, and how this partnership with Arizona Commerce Authority has really come together. There you go, Ricky.
So, when you looked at nominating KSI for the Success Award winner for the Arizona SDC in 2019, you looked at some of the same things that the Arizona Commerce Authority looked for. You know, strong entrepreneurs, you know, what's the economic impact that they're putting back in the community? And if you can get to the page, it's like second from the back, it has some information from that brochure on KSI Metals. So Carol Kay, with my assistance, was able to get a loan for over $2 million in order to start the manufacturing process in Taylor, Arizona, to start doing metal buildings and metal roofs, and with a specialty, more customized, so that they're not as leaky, that you have different colors, and so on. So we worked on that project together, we got the funding. Then I brought in Arizona Commerce Authority and talked about, you know, Carol's doing manufacturing probably for the first time, he's expanding his business of building trade, but how can we work with NPC as well as the Arizona Commerce Authority to get his people trained? And we applied for an ACA training grant for up to $195,000 to help Sarah with that. He's also looked at the MET program, which is Manufacturing Efficiency Processes, which is another company that the Arizona Commerce Authority provides a partnership with. So what I love about this partnership is that we can take larger businesses that are looking to expand and develop and stay local, pre-fire-paying jobs, those opportunities that NTC is training our folks for, what Kenny Keynes has been training our folks for, and keep our young people local. And these partnerships with Arizona Commerce really keep those monies and that talent in our own backyard. So just a little information about that program and where we are there, and I'll let Robert take it home. Thank you.
So Case Supply and KSI Metals was a great opportunity. I contacted Tracy and I came up. I've been in this role as a small business ombudsman since November. It's a brand new role with the ACA. And I came up to meet Tracy for the first time and said, hey, do you have any small businesses I might be able to just meet and understand the community better? And she connected me with her LK. And when we were talking to them, we were talking, and Tracy shared some of the things that they were doing. I realized there's a lot of opportunity here for some help and support from the ACA. And so I was able to connect them with the parts of our organization that would fit, and it's worked out extremely well, and we're excited to see their success and growth. So that's all I have. Thank you for letting us know this time. Do you have any questions?
Yes. Clearly, the work that you're doing is wonderful, and as you work a small business, is, I think, the best way to provide growth in smaller communities like our Navajo County, Apache County. Our area is small, it's rural, and traditionally what happens is that the rural folks get the short end of the stick when it comes to opportunities for growth and for new development. Now, how do you get your message out to the people that are looking for help, don't know how to get it, but what are the communication tools that you're using? Because just as Joe Average, I read the newspaper, I listen to the radio, I watch television, which of course is dominated by political issues. So how do you get this message out and invite the small businesses that need the help, that want the help, get the help?
You can take that. I don't know how you do it here.
Well, routinely what we do is we will hold workshops. We've done workshops all over Apache and Navajo County and have for the last 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
We get as many people as we can in there, and we show them the tools that we have, and then they're able to work with us one-on-one. And that's really kind of the bread and butter of our program, is that one-to-one advising. And so we do workshops to attract people there.
But how do you get them out of the woodwork?
We use folks like Everett to let people know about these workshops.
But Everett's retired.
Everett's retired. He does public service announcements. I have a mailing list of about 2,000 people. We get the word out on that. We get them out on social media. One of the things a lot of people don't know is that my grant is restricted from using public funds for advertising. And there's a reason for that. Because there are small businesses out there trying to be consultants for other small businesses. So if we're using taxpayer money to say that we have a free service and we're doing free advertising, we may be putting somebody out of business who wants to be a professional consultant for small businesses. So it really is word of mouth. It's platforms like this. It's public. We do advocacy to let people know about the services that we provide. We work with chambers. We work with local economic development groups. We just work with the MoonShot program. So any way that we can get connected, we're connected with the White Mountain Business Owners Roundtable and the Real Arizona Group. I mean, it sounds like alphabet soup right now, I know. But wherever there's economic development and people who want to get in front of those entrepreneurs, we're there. We get a lot of referrals. We've had more referrals this year than we've ever had before. And we spend that one-to-one time with these folks, helping them with their business plan, helping them get a marketing plan, and predominantly, I mean, so far this year, we've helped people raise about $4.2 million in capital, and what that means is loan applications. Sometimes it's private investing. Sometimes it's figuring out creative ways to leverage the assets they have to start a business. And our goal is $6 million. That was just raised by double from the Trump administration. So we're actively seeking those relationships with bankers to refer their folks who need some assistance to become a stronger business. And then with the Arizona Commerce Authority, we're going to start a new program to get the word out about this new partnership.
Yeah, we're going to be one of the things I'm going to be doing is an ombudsman and some roundtables throughout the state in each community every quarter. But part of the funding that we are providing can be used for advertising. So it's not restricted in that way. So there can be some additional advertising. That's one of the pieces we want, is to give them a little more flexibility to get the word out. Because it's a great service that, again, a lot of people don't know about it. You know, it's organic. It's kind of a grassroots, word of mouth type of program. But it's a fabulous program, so we do want to get that information out.
Well, Case Supply, I know, started out in Taylor, and they now have a shop in Cholo. are doing very, very well because of California. And the reason I say they're doing well because of California is because the Californians who can't afford to live there anymore are fleeing California, are moving to the White Mountains and to Holbrook and to Winslow, and K-Supply is supplying the builders. The builders are doing well. They can't hire enough people to build all of the houses that are in demand. Now, people are buying houses in my neighborhood, in the best neighborhood, and in all of our neighborhoods. And I have gone to the people that are buying these new houses and buying old houses from people that are moving on. And I ask them, and I have made it a habit of doing this, and I say, where are you all from? And they say, Fort Mike. Or wherever. Californians are fleeing that part of the country because they're afraid that it's going to fall off into the Pacific Ocean for some such a reason. And I'm sure that everybody here is having the same experience. So, can you advertise to other builders that there are opportunities? Because that seems to be...
So, in the States, there's a shortage of qualified construction workers everywhere. So all
well, that's what we do. We provide those. We educate them.
And so that's where Governor Ducey is really behind the CTE, because not just construction workers, but, you know, there's a stat that I read that the average aircraft mechanic is 53 years old. And there's a shortage of aircraft. So there's going to be a vacuum at some point in the near future for aircraft mechanics. You can go to the two-year program, it's actually, I think, an 18-month program at Chandler Gilbert Community College or Pima,
mm-hmm.
and when you're done, you're making about $70,000 a year. That's better than most bachelor's degrees, or almost all bachelor's degrees. So, you know, there's great opportunity that before I came to this role, I was in the automotive industry working for a franchisor in auto repair, and that industry is the exact same way. There's a lot of people that ran their auto repair facility, very successful, put the kids through college. Their kids want nothing to do with working on cars and owning the place. And they're like, okay, what do I do? My kids don't want it. So they're just walking away. They're just closing up and walking away. And because there's not a lot of mechanics, not a lot of younger adults, but they're going, you know what, that could be a good career for me. You know, I don't have to go to school for 8 years to be a doctor. I can be, you know, I can go to school and learn and get the certifications on that and work for a few years and then take and buy a business. So, junior colleges are fundamental in that.
Some other thing to address your initial observation. K-Supply came to the SBDC at the height of the recession when in commercial trade was not a good time to be a business. And they came there because we did use the public service announcement letting small business owners know that if you're feeling a crunch, come and do a well business checkup. We're going to look at your financials. We're going to look where you are with your peers. We're going to talk about how you can leverage your suppliers, you know, what to say to your bankers. And he said, that was a great time for me to kind of stop all the craziness when everything is going really fast and sit down and say, how can I improve my internal operations? And I think because he took that step forward when it was slow, now he's in a better position to do the expansion that he's doing right now. So we reach people not only when they're at the height of business, but also maybe when there's economic dips. We've been here in the community, the SBDC, doing workshops and loans when we've had the Wall Fire as well as the Radio Cheneskai Fire with the SBA-type loans for those businesses that lost some money. I would love to be able to say in a nutshell what it is that we do, but sometimes it's so big that it's difficult to enunciate in two sentences all of the services that we do, and I know you have the same problem, Robert. I thank you so much for your time. Any other questions?
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the board, as you know, at a previous meeting, board members Ewan had requested that we also hear a presentation from the Economic Collaborative of Northern Arizona. They're with us today, and Mr. John Stigman is here to do a presentation. Mr. Stigman, I'll turn the podium over to you.
Thank you. How much time do I have?
That's up to them.
Okay.
Because I brought hours of slides. I know. Just get that out of the way. Seriously, how much slides?
Well, hard to say.
You just want to take the hook one at a time.
You're about 15 minutes. So
okay. All right. Well, I've got a lot more slides. So let me introduce myself. My name is John Stigman. I'm the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Economic Collaborative in Northern Arizona. We are a group that was founded probably about 8-9 years ago, during the recession actually. We started out in Flagstaff. We were supported by City of Flagstaff, Coconino County, City of Winslow, NAU, Coconino Community College, BNSF, a whole number of different entities. And we do regional economic development. And we work very closely with the Arizona Commerce Authority and a number of communities. We even go up to the Nav, Utah. We did a lot of work this past few years on the loss of Navajo generating stations. And I thought what I'd bring you today is a few years ago, the ACA actually gave us a grant to study the I-40 corridor because we felt there was some connectivity between Williams, Flagstaff, and Winslow. And we weren't really sure, so we started to dig into that, and I'm going to share that information with you. I also brought this morning the work plan for Winslow, since it's in Navajo County, to give you a flavor of the types of things that we do. We probably won't get all through that today, but I do want to talk about the corridor study, if I can work the clicker here. That's good enough. Let's try that one. Which one's what I need? That one, right?
There you go.
Oh, there we go. Let me go back. So pause it here. I jumped up a couple of slides.
Where is the one we made to point it directly?
What's that?
I think it's the one.
Oh, there we are. Okay, let's try it again. Well, I'm missing a couple slides. Let me move up here. Anyway, so in our work on the corridor, we started to look at all kinds of different situations that happened along that corridor, and we went back actually to when BNSF or Santa Fe arrived to look at the distinctions between the three communities. And what we found before I-40 came in, there were very distinct communities along I-40 because of the travel distance and different reasons. Flagstaff seemed to be the hub, and even though Winslow was the hub for BNSF. And so we looked at the retail, we looked at transportation, logistics, to see what the similarities were. And upon that, we did a number of interviews with chambers of commerce, city officials along I-40, local businesses. We talked to both tribes, Hopi and Navajo, to get their input. And then we did a SWOT analysis of strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And what's interesting about our SWOT analysis is that where one community had a weakness, the other one had a strength. Where one community had threats, another community supported that. So by going through that, as an example, some of the weaknesses in Winslow's limited workforce, perceived remoteness, and some of the opportunities have to do with transportation. In fact, tomorrow we're meeting with NAGTA and the City of Winslow to talk about the connectivity between Winslow, Flagstaff, and some other communities as they develop. So the purpose was to kind of lay this out so that we could work collectively with these various communities. And I wish I could get this clicker to work. Will you give it a shot?
What slide are you looking for?
I'm looking for the next one. In fact, we've gone through those
might just go back to the board packet. The presentation is in there.
Sure.
Yeah, why don't you, can you move some of the numbers? Got it working?
They'll tell me when to advance.
I think
she
has to
be there.
Yeah. Okay, why don't you advance it? Okay.
We're going to go to the board packet.
So some of the opportunities that we identified, especially in Navajo County, is the abundance of land and water. And as an example, Williams is really limited with water. Flagstaff is limited with industrial land. As an example, Winslow has 1,000 acres. City of Winslow owns 1,000 acres of industrial land, and they're highly motivated to develop it. So we've been working with them for a number of years to do that. Keeping it busy with my slides from around here.
Which slide would you like to go to?
Go, just keep moving. I'll tell you when to stop. Stop right there. So the other thing that we learned is that 38% of the workforce in the region travels more than 50 miles to go to work every day. Okay, it's very significant. So what's happening is there's a lot of cross traffic. A lot of that effect is from Navajo and Hopi, but even between, let's say, Winslow, Holbrook, Flagstaff, down to Sholo, there's a lot of movement in traffic. And that's why COVID is doing that. Maybe not. So we see the potential for truck to rail. We see a potential for, next slide please, we actually see a potential for retail along I-40. We've been working with Winslow on that. We just got that from the International Council of Shopping Centers to talk with them. And what these numbers represent is we have data software to project out what the potential retail is based on population in a community. And if you look at Winslow, their potential is $54 million. They actually do about $84 million in retail. Flagstaff, their potential is $800 million. They do over $1 billion in retail. Williams, same type of thing. A lot of that is an effect of the travel up and down I-40. Visitors and other folks. Obviously, when you get down to this part, the reservations have limited retail, so there's a border potential there also. So, next slide, please. So, on Winslow, and I wanted to share the Winslow stuff so much because of MPC and your involvement in the workforce and development of the workforce. We've been working for the past year and a half to locate an OSB, a strand board plant, in Winslow. It's going to be on about 200 acres. It'll actually consume about 400 acres. It'll employ probably about 250 to 300 people. It's all dependent on FORFRI, the Fort Forest Restoration Initiative. So we work with a number of different entities that want to bid on FORFRI. And this is just one of them. So even though we're talking about this OSB plant, until an entity actually gets the contract for FORFRI, will they actually engage and do something? So this is just one of many entities, but this one is targeted for Winslow. We helped in the marketing of their industrial land. We've had a number of presentations that we've done. We get a lot of leads through ACA, the Commerce Authority, for industrial leads. We have one of the inhibitors in this area is actually natural gas. We were working with a company 2 years ago for Winslow that was going to be 1 million square feet under roof. And the only inhibitor to the whole project was natural gas. And it was a limitation with natural gas in this area. And even though the line is up the road, it's still a significant cost to tie in the Kidder Peabody's wanting to bring it down. So we've had a number of challenges with that. But next slide. I brought the Winslow work plan with me to give you a flavor of some of the types of things that we do. We focus on sectors. For Winslow, it really has to do with industrial manufacturing because they have so much industrial land there. And we feel that the workforce actually can handle a lot of industrial work here. And of course, we work on the retail sector. You might look at this slide. We do business attraction, obviously. We do work with different accelerators and incubators in the region to help them out. Obviously, ACA, the ground system, is a real big push. There's a number of SBDCs connected to the various community colleges in the community. So, next slide. We market the region. We do this in a whole number of different ways. Again, we work back to the Commerce Authority to keep reminding them that we're out here, that we're, even though we're perceived as rural, there's a lot of activity going on in rural. And your comment about California folk is very true. One of the things that we're finding is that a whole bunch of people are moving in to these more remote communities, and they're bringing their income with them. Because what we found is, like in Silicon Valley, LA, the Bay Area, you know, you can pick up a house 1,500 square feet for about $1.3 million. And those employers up there, even though they're paying their engineers and software engineers a very significant amount of money, they really can't afford to live there. So because of the connectivity that exists now, those companies are saying, look, we're going to hire you, and we're going to give you a bonus. You can live anywhere you want. So that's opened up a whole new opportunity for workers to say, where do we want to live? And we see, especially in Flagstaff, I work with Kanab, Utah, they're getting a whole influx of people in Kanab, believe it or not, but they've got very strong fiber connectivity. So connectivity is a critical element of that.
Do we have the broadband capability on the I-40 corridor to be able to provide housing, if you will, for the Silicon Valley?
I think so. We're experiencing it, and I live in Flagstaff. Thank you. How do you know? I live in Flagstaff, and the high end is what's in demand. And, you know, we look back over the last 5 years in the Flagstaff MSA, which is the community, the Coconino County, added about 5,000 jobs. And we started looking at the various categories of those jobs. And over about 26% of those jobs were in management. And I can tell you, we didn't add that many businesses. And that's what started to give us the indicator of these people moving in. If you have the connectivity, if you have a community that has the connectivity, people will move into it. If it doesn't have the connectivity, it's going to be a problem. We have a major problem up in Page, as an example, with connectivity. So I can't speak to this particular area. I know that Winslow has the connectivity, and I know that the ACA, as I mentioned, they're getting very aggressive with broadband because it's going to be critical as we move forward, obviously. I hope I answered your question.
Yes.
Okay. So marketing, branding, we promote the areas ourselves. We're out a lot. We do a lot of trade shows. Next slide. We go to Bio International mainly because Flagstaff, one of the Flagstaff major sectors is bio. The same with medical device with WL Core. Flagstaff's 8 times more specialized medical device than any other community in the country. But we go to the International Manufacturing Expo, Consumer Electronics Show, At the Consumer Electronics Show, we have really discovered there's a lot of startup businesses that are, would like to be in remote rural areas. Even European companies now have a kind of affinity with a rural community. There's a lot of them that's where they started, in France and some of the Germany. We located a company called IMO Containers into Belmont, which is just west of Flagstaff. They're a French company. They're the original company that made the wooden boxes that cheese go into about 100 years ago. And so they intentionally wanted to locate in a small community. Now, we had to demonstrate the workforce. We went with ATS because they use a lot of electricity. So infrastructure is critical. The workforce infrastructure and then the whole power grid infrastructure, water, all that is critical to business attraction, obviously. I don't know if any of you heard about the egg firm that was coming to this part of the world. That was about 3 years ago. They're going to use, what was it, about 1 million gallons of water a day to feed all those chickens. They had about 5 or 6 million chickens that they were planning. It never materialized, but those are the types of things that we work on. And we have to surround, when we get an inquiry, we have to look at workforce, infrastructure, right off the top, right out of the box. So we have a number of business attraction partnerships. I talked about ACA. We work with the various counties. We work with Navajo. We work with Pocono. We do a little bit with King County and Utah. So that's kind of basic background. I'd be happy to answer any questions for you if we can.
I had a quick question. You stopped at Winslow. Do you have to be a member, or do you have a limitation how far you go from Flagstaff?
Yeah, this is a membership organization. It's not like the chamber. It's really mostly governments and large businesses. And Winslow, I'll be honest with you, Winslow contacted us and said, we see an affinity with Flagstaff, which kind of led us into this whole study, actually. And so, yeah, that's pretty much how it works. We do, because we're supported by Coconino County, that's taken us into the NGS arena. We did a whole economic development strategy for them. And so, yeah, we're a membership organization, but we have large business and government, both educational institutions. NAU is a big supporter of ours, and we work closely with our members on a lot of different things. Yes.
I guess my question is, because you're involved in marketing the area to various businesses, what do you think the market, what type of business do you think is likely to grow or to come to our area? And with that, do we have the programs to prepare the workforce for these businesses?
Yeah, I would say the number one would be logistics, because of I-40 and BNSF. Logistics are very attractive across I-40. And I, again, I'm speaking to Winslow because I work with their land so much. That would be a good match. Also, heavier industrial would do well here. A number of years ago, we landed Chef Steele in the Belmont, and the way that we're able to do that was we're able to demonstrate that the Navajo Nation teaches welding to a lot of their members, and so we're able to demonstrate a strong welding workforce. What's really difficult in economic development, to answer your question, is it's the chicken or the egg, right? What business is going to come so that the learning institutions can prepare the workforce. It's very difficult to go back and forth. Okay, so I would say heavy industrial, for sure. Logistics is another one. Did I answer your question, or you want more specific?
No, thank you. I guess, Mr. President, I'm hoping that we do offer these programs at the Low Colorado campus until we can have our students prepared for the future.
Right, and this is exactly why we need to be staying in contact with groups like UConn and the Winslow Chamber, the Holbrook Chamber and the City Council to make sure that as we look at what programs we need in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, we're not developing programs where we produce students who aren't going to have jobs because they're, you know, we're headed down the wrong path. Or they have to move out of the community to find jobs, when at the same time we're trying to recruit businesses locally for jobs that you don't have to train workforce.
Right. I'll share one story with you. In West Virginia, I was at a presentation, actually it was up at Page. We brought in some national guys to talk about restarting the community with those new economic upheaval. And what they shared with us was that because of the coal shutdown in West Virginia, it was, you know, first of all, it's highly impoverished, and number two, they lost the core jobs that they had. They actually made a connection between mining and coding for software. And they have a whole educational process now to educate that workforce in digital coding, software, writing software, things like that. And I would really recommend that in the rural communities, they're not so rural anymore, okay, based on your example with people moving in. And I would recommend that you broaden your horizon a little bit and look at some of the things that can be done on what I would call a more individual scale, and people don't have to leave the community anymore to go do those things. And so it's kind of a paradigm shift because of the connectivity. And that's, when I saw the coal miners doing coding, that was quite the, it was a quite interesting approach. It really was. It was a very much an eye-opener. And so I would share that with you as an educational entity to really think kind of broadly where you've been because of what's really taking place in our country.
Mr. Chairman, just a second to demonstrate a little bit. We have that capability to teach. NPC has a very robust IT program.
Great.
Well, it's good, but nobody knows about it. And so we're not getting the sign up from a student standpoint. And why is that? Because for some strange reason, the wonderful urban character of Navajo County and Apache County tends to cause the industrial people, the big thinkers that have the cash, to think that the only thing that we can do here is to provide opportunities to dig holes in the ground and take potash or to take helium or to take the water that nobody wants to give away. And so we have all of these capabilities to do things that that we don't necessarily want to do, but the people in Omaha think we should be providing those resources, basic resources, and that's not what we want to do.
Well, I think you have a broader opportunity than that, and I think you actually have multiple opportunities. What you described is one opportunity.
Natural resources.
Right, natural resources, okay, but as I understand the potash business, the Russians control that, so they killed the market on it
very
quickly.
They sent a guy out here to Holbrook and said, He said, no, don't do that.
Yeah. Anyway, you've got those natural resources, yes, okay. You've got logistics, strong logistics. That's another area that I mentioned. Have the ability to do heavy industrial, like we talked about with the OSB plant, those types of things. But you also have the, because you do have some connectivity, what's going on in our world today, you don't have to go out and get a degree in some type of digital work and leave the area anymore. You can live in your area and do that type of work. That's the distinction that wasn't there 20 years ago.
Or even 5 years
ago. 5 years ago, right. Okay, so connectivity is critical.
I think I can help answer that question as well. I don't think kids in high school know what jobs they can get that can keep them in their community.
Well, why don't you educate them?
Huh?
Why don't you educate them?
I'm trying, in one person. But where that comes in is I don't think they realize they can get an associate's degree in IT, and that can keep them here. And it might be working for a warehouse in logistics, but they've got an IT division. They've got IT people on site. Or it might be doing digital marketing because you have it for some company in another state, but you can work remotely doing it. You just don't realize. And I'm coming upon this because I have kids that are graduating and trying to help guide them in their careers, and they're just not seeing it in high school of what opportunities are really available, especially if they don't want to get a 4-year degree. You know, for a long time you said degree, as opposed to education. And with the coding as an example, it's a certificate, it's not a degree, but it's a certificate that can pay a lot of money and keep you in the community.
Yeah, and it's literally possible now to live in Holbrook and work for Google, work for Facebook, work for all those different companies, and make $150,000 a year as an engineer or a coder. Those opportunities are there. And I think for the board to think differently about that, I think is really critical as education moves forward, because that's what's happening in our world. The connectivity is worldwide, literally worldwide. So, anyway, thank you for having me today. I'll be happy to answer any other questions.
We have a million questions, but there are no answers.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, we have 12 more items by my count on the agenda. Do you need a 5-minute break before we move forward?
No, we're going to take one. Yeah, let's go ahead. We're going to have to take another one because I have to do some addition.
Right.
So 5 minutes. 5 minutes. We'll reconvene.
Yeah. Yeah. just get it over.
Make sure you're at least 20 feet from the door if you do that.
I know. And that's one of the big things. Maybe they do the window. Here,
they do, but we're not.
The best broadband in Navajo County is the court. When I worked here, I was actually had two systems, counties and ours. So counties is junk. NPC is even worse.
From potential link to having I'm not sure they started that. It's a major project. Digging holes everywhere.
my daughter is in San Jose, California. She works up in the mountains here. And she's part of a international company called ISI. They provide all kinds of services to secondary schools, but they do maintenance on buildings and industrial facilities and so on. All of the world, Argentina, England.
Oh, wow.
Headquartered in
San Jose.
Copenhagen.
Oh, Copenhagen.
She just got back.
That's a neat job.
She was advertised for home.
I'm going to go.
Yeah,
I'm going to go.
You never got him?
Never noticed.
Improvements into the classroom in that area to bring it up into the stack as well. you have any questions?
Is there a list of different items and their cost?
You know, this was a very elevated view. As we move forward, the board will have to approve those.
Correct, but I mean, is there any suggestions?
There, we do have some recommendations. Let me see
here. Mr. Chairman?
What page is on?
Did we get the grant?
Yes.
We got the grant.
Yeah, what it was a budget allocation by the state of Arizona for $1 million.
So the governor has signed?
Correct.
So we can say that we have the money?
Yes, we do.
So we can start working out a budget for these items here.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And obviously we'll go through, we will ask the board to approve our normal process. We'll put out, we have contract work already underway to that we can finalize now to do the site prep design for the buildings. And if NATC wishes to ask the board to use part of the $1 million to finalize that, they'll need to come to you and request those funds. If they, it's a relatively small amount of money, so if they want to use their existing resources, they can just go ahead and spend that. For the major projects, however, we'll first need to go out to bid for architecture services and then for construction services as well. Okay. Well, not to bid, but we will go out, we will go through a competitive process.
Thank you.
For architecture services and then for construction services, the board will need to approve those. Understand that one thing that is a little different about this, because you are stewards of these funds, is that any amount of money that is spent needs to, out of this pool, needs to be approved.
So this is a relatively small project.
No, it's quite large.
If the grant is $1 million.
Yes. Right, yes, it's $1 million appropriation from the state.
So the overall project is more than $1 million?
No, this is the entire project.
Okay.
Are you going to tell me the old quote, million here, a million there? After a while, you're talking a lot of money?
No, I'm hoping that that the scope of the work would remain within $1 million and not go over.
Okay, so,
million this.
So, Mr. Chairman,
yes.
So now the $1 million is there. The next step is for the NATC board to meet and ask us for...
And my guess is they will be back at your next board meeting in August with an initial set of requests.
Okay, that was the next question. It was how long is this going to take? And...
we just don't want you to be surprised when they show up. We want you to have the information up front.
And it will be at the August meeting because the NATC board meets on August 6th. And so, at your August district governor's meeting, it will be brought to you, yes.
Sounds good.
Thank you. Our next item is also for Vice President Jackson. This is the annual report that the board has requested on utilization of two of our scholarship accounts.
I thank Director Razor for putting this together. As you can see presented, you can see that our area high schools are very much utilizing the college balance scholarship. We are not seeing. In fact, it's interesting because I think even with the increase of talent, those students are taking advantage of the college bound even after hours.
We expect it to go down.
And it's not because they're finishing. Students are finishing their degrees while they're, or at least their age yet, while they're still attending high school. So this is a huge benefit still to the residents. We're not seeing the decline at all. And any questions?
Should have had it when I was in high school.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our next items, our next two items are both for Vice President Ellison, so I'll turn the time over to her.
Thank you, President. The item that's up next is the request to approve the revised budget. We had talked about this in the May timeframe that because the state of Arizona had not approved their budget, we would likely be doing some adjustments to our budget to better reflect what they gave us in terms of allocation. So the allocation that we got for equalization The estimate we included in our budget for approval in May was $204,400 less than what we actually got. So in order to ensure that we reflect the right amount of state appropriations but not go over the total revenue that was set, we did reclasses between equalization, investment income, and other. So we'll see an increase in equalization, a decrease in investment income, and a decrease in other, so that other ends up being a zero balance. And so that is how we're showing the additional funding we got for equalization. We've already talked about the additional funding that we got for $1 million, which is for NATC, so that's a separate legal entity. We are not reflecting those funds in this budget, nor will we reflect any of their expenditures in this budget. We also got additional funding of $889,000 that came in at the last minute, and we never had that in our budget as a potential income. And so we have received that. But in discussion at the exec team and with the guidance of President Zev, what we plan to do with that additional funding is save it so that we have those funds available when the Troy Power Plant makes some decisions about their assets and how those assets might, in fact, impact our property taxes in future years. And as a result, those revenue streams are not in this budget. We will accept the money, but it will not be reflected there because we are not going to be spending the funds in the current year.
So it's not money we have to spend.
That is correct.
We couldn't spend it. Right, and
we couldn't spend. I think that's more accurate.
Right. The community college presidents were very clear with the legislature right into the process that while we really appreciate the additional funding, the vast majority of districts have already passed their budgets. Their boards had passed approved budgets, and as the board routinely notes, the budget can go down, but not up. What we are waiting to see in the upcoming legislative session is if this will indeed just be a one-time distribution of funds, or if it will become an annual increase. I don't like to think of it as an increase. It's somewhat of a return to funding by formula. Still not where formula is, but closer. And if so, then we will need to work with the board to reflect that in our ongoing budgets.
In that case, this is an action item.
Mr. Chair, I move to 2019-2020 revised budget as presented.
I have a motion and a second. Starting on my left, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion carries.
Thank you very much. What comes next is a new requirement from the Auditor General. Every year, community colleges, as well as the counties, cities, and towns, are required to designate an individual in their organization as the chief fiscal officer. We do this in July of every year. However, the State Auditor General's office is now requiring that this designation be accompanied either by ordinance or by a resolution by the board that confirms who the CFO, Chief Fiscal Officer, is. And so the recommendation from staff, of course, is that myself, the President of the Administration, and the Chief Fiscal Financial Officer be designated as the person who submits on behalf of the institution the annual budgeted expenditure limit.
Mr. Chairman, it's my honor. Vice President Ellison as the Chief Fiscal, not financial, Chief Fiscal Officer, authorized to submit the annual expenditure limitation report on behalf of NPC.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Starting on my left.
Aye.
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 Motion carries.
Thank you. There is a resolution attached to the documentation, and I'll have you guys find out at the end.
Thank you. Our next item is something we're very pleased to bring forward, which is a request to accept a Navajo Apache First Things First grant. Cheers from the audience. I'll turn the time over to Vice President Jackson.
Okay, thank you. Staff recommends acceptance of the following grant awarded to Navajo Apache First Things First Regional Partnership Council. Professional development for early K-12 care and education for rest homes in the amount of $225,000. I would say Dr. Allison Landy is the one that moved forward with this, and if you have any questions, she's available to answer them, but know that the purpose of this grant is to provide comprehensive supportive training and technical assistance to at least 60 early childhood professionals in communities of Holbrook, Snowflake, Sanders, St. John's, Ferryville, and Linden, and through the use of learning collaborative models. This is a huge addition as far as serving future early childhood education and current early childhood educators, as well as parents. So, if you have any questions, this is an action item.
Does this grant reflect the hard work that our faculty is doing?
Not only the hard work they have done, but the hard work they are going to do in the future, too, through this grant. And one of the questions asked when we went after this was, do you have the time to do this work?
And because she said,
it's incredible. And this really has the opportunity to benefit a lot of communities.
In that case, since she says she's got the time, you got the time, we got the money. I would move to accept the Navajo Apache First Nations First Grant as recommended in the amount of $225,000.
Second. Motion and second. Turn on my left.
Aye.
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 Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our next item is the annual report to the board of the Higher Learning Commission financial ratios. Vice President Ellison.
Thank you. As you know, as we go into accreditation, there's a lot of activity, but one of the constants is their review of our fiscal health. And so every year we are required to submit financial data that goes into the development of these ratios for the Higher Learning Commission. We have one key financial index that's called the Composite Financial Index, the CFI. And this CFI takes into consideration four other ratios that have different weighting structures that they come into this final number. For the last several years, since 2015, we have had to show these financial ratios with and without pension activity. So initially in 2014 and 15, through 17 actually, we had to exclude the ratio or the financials related to pensions, which is approximately $20 million. Then this past year, for 17-18, we were asked to exclude OPEB, other post-employment benefit activities. For MPC, that amount is immaterial and therefore are not included in the ratios that we have. And so you can see from the CFI chart that our ratio, with or without those financial impacts on the pension and other post-employment benefits, have been over 7 for the last 10 years. In the last 2 years, we've been over 8.3. And so it really assesses our financial health. And the 8.52 is without the GASB. 8.88 is with the GASB. And so the threshold is raised. Anything above a 3 would indicate that we have sound financial health, but the fact that we're at 8 is pretty significant. You'll see that back in 2009, we were around 7, and when we started first initially identifying the ratios or the GASB accounting standards, it dropped back down to 7. This is largely due to the fact that we do not have debt as an institution. So there's one of those three ratios that is just flat across the board. We haven't had any debt for a number of years, and so it does have an impact on this particular ratio.
One of the three items is the primary reserve ratio, and that is just taking a look at net assets divided by expenses. We have different name categories for them in government accounting. So it's unrestricted net assets plus expendable restricted net assets divided by operating expenses plus non-operating expenses. But again, the threshold for this is 0.6. And so we have been above those amounts for, again, a number of years. Back in 2009, when we still had some debt, that had an impact on that number down there. The net operating revenue is essentially profit, if you will, divided by revenues. We're not a for-profit institution, so it really becomes operating income or loss. Plus net operating, non-operating revenues divided by the operating revenues plus non-operating revenues. Getting a little harder to say. But you will again see that it's a 0.04 that we have to be above, and we have been above those in a number of years. The return on net assets is a change in net assets divided by total net assets. And so this has been, I guess, it's still above the threshold. This one is one where if you're above inflation, you're in good shape. And they like to see you 2 or 3 to 4% above inflation. Inflation has generally been around the 10% based on what we've been looking at every year in the December time frame. So again, we are above it. It's one we will continue to monitor, and you'll see that there is some fluctuations. Nothing certainly to be concerned about, but back from 2009, it is certainly declining, and that is part, again, related to how the calculation is done with those debts. And the last chart shows you the fact that it's called the viability ratio, and it makes up 35% of the ratio. And we have no debt, so this ratio is zero.
Infinity.
Yep. So, bottom line, we are in good financial health, and that is one of the things that our creditors are looking at. Are we following our mission statement and developing our strategic plan to then assess or allocate resources to those strategic plans? And do we really have the resources on a day-to-day basis to meet our operating needs? And the answers to both of those are certainly yes. Questions?
So this is not a GASB requirement, it's a higher commission,
higher learning commission requirement?
Yes, it is a higher learning commission requirement, and therefore the ratios are not as similar to the financial ratios that we would have for liquidity or debt.
Yeah. So do they have a benchmark to measure this against?
Yes, those benchmarks are included in each of these graphs. So again, so the composite financial indicator, that green line there that says anything above a 3 is solid health. We're way above a close approaching line. And so each of these ratios have a threshold amount. So down in the primary reserve ratio, it is 0.6. We're above that. Again, net operating revenues, it should be above 0.04, and again, we are above that. Return on net assets, this is the one where if you're above inflation 3 to 4%, you're in good shape.
Thank
you. Anything above 1.15 on the debt ratio would have been the benchmark, but we have no debt.
Thank you.
That's a pretty good report.
Been a solid report for a number of years.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our next item is, the board may remember last year we began giving the board an information summary of annual program reviews. Our instructional programs are on a 5-year review cycle. You have a couple of program reviews today, and then VP Jackson, I think, will be doing at least one more in August. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so I'll turn the time over to Vice President Jackson.
Okay. Both of these program reviews are in the Career and Technical Education Division. Dean Belknap, just to let you know, the Career and Technical Education Division does an excellent job with their program reviews because they go through a yearly process to evaluate their programs yearly, and that way it's not new information, new data for them when they look at a five-year program review. And that's part of the process we want to adopt at this college for every program beginning in the fall. So that will be coming forward. The first one is the Computer Information Systems Program Review. One of the benefits of a program review is to go through and say, what are some of our challenges, what are we doing right, and what's some recommendations so we can do things better. Board Member Madison mentioned that in computer information systems we had a decline in enrollment. One of the things that led to that is that we have been searching for another faculty member to move forward with the cybersecurity program and for the computer information systems. And fortunately, they were able to, talking about the movement from Silicon Valley, we were able to secure another faculty member earlier this year. So we will have another full-time faculty member in computer information systems to expand that program and those offerings. As we move forward, they're setting up student clubs in the fall, which would garner some interest as well. So that's part of the plan as we move forward with computer information systems to expand that program. Any questions about that particular program?
How many people do we have in the program today?
I think it's the
faculty or students.
Right now we have two full-time faculty, and I believe there are about four adjunct faculty that teach for the computer information systems. Currently the program serves about right under 300 students per year.
And then again, 300?
300 students per year.
We have 300 students per year going through this program?
Yes.
That includes dual enrollment.
Yes, it does.
Including dual enrollment.
Yes.
So we have nerds at the high school level as well.
Mm-hmm. And we have 61, I think your report shows, we have 61 degree-seeking students on campus compared to 52 a year ago. So even without that second faculty member, we're seeing an increase.
Yeah.
Well, clearly this is the area that's in growth. So I would think with the additional faculty, and this guy or person is a real go-getter.
You're going to see, I mean, even right now with Eric Bishop's leadership, I mean, we've seen a 17% increase in the number of students seeking this degree path, and I think you're going to see an even greater increase over this next year.
What I'm particularly pleased about is that person is here in Holbrook, and so they'll be able to offer it along the I-40 corridor as opposed to just in show low snowflake and online.
The next one is the cosmetology program review. And again, it kind of gives you some background information, but what I want to make sure that you really to highlight how well the students are doing and how many students are going into the workforce still. In the area of cosmetology. And one of the things we didn't include in this, but the cost per foot for this program, this is one of those programs, again, that with the partnership with NAVIT, is significant because of the work that they do and the number of students that can have our high school to participate in this program. But right now, as you can see, when students leave here and they take the Arizona State Board of Cosmetology, and that's their focus to make sure these students can go, it's a direct work program. So when they complete this program, if that's the career they want to choose. It's quite interesting, and one of the anecdotal things in talking to the group that put this together with the chair, Chloe Fugetti, and then with Baron Sam, as they wrote this, program review and discussing the students with them, is there's a number of students that take cosmetology because they're going to work as cosmetologists as they're attending college to earn a four-year degree, which is quite interesting. So a number of the students may not be in the workforce full-time, but they're utilizing their training that they're getting in kind of college to even extend their training in other areas. So any questions about the program review? If we'll be bringing an automotive to you in August, Dr. Clark will be presenting that at that time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's now up to the board to decide how they'd like to proceed. Do you need to take a break?
We need to take a break so I can do some addition, and then we'll come back.
Okay. I didn't know if you preferred to just go into executive session and do your work.
It'd be easier if I do it, and everybody can take a break.
Okay. You want to just holler at us when you're done? Okay. So we need to take a break for a few minutes.
I have a computer if you need it. I should. No, I can do simple.
So we're back recording.
Correct.
But while we're waiting, one of the things, Mark, that we talked about, we're asking you to walk over there.
All right.
And hopefully you'll get the rest of it.
So, do you all as part of my board report, Brian?
I would prefer you flesh it out.
Okay. And give it to us. How much do you want?
Whatever you think is needed.
Okay. And give it to us in August.
In August.
And an executive session.
Okay.
That gives you time to think it through.
Sure.
You can have a beer while you do it. Pardon?
There's an old story.
Well, I was thinking of a writer who usually was, what was his name? He shot his wife.
Yes, and he was trying to shoot an
apple off her head.
And he missed the apple?
He missed the apple. What famous writer. I'm trying to think of his name. Thank you.
The English department chair is here.
See, I can remember things, just not everything from back in college was a long time ago. Okay. Do we have any kind of motion since we're back in session? You were going to make it.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, after discussing the issue of compensation and contracts with our president, we agreed mutually that the existing contract would be extended.
No. That we would direct
that we would direct the attorney to prepare.
Direct the secretary of the board to move forward as discussed in the executive session.
You said it. Okay.
Do I have a second?
Second.
We have motion and second. You guys are driving me.
I got you back.
On my left.
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries. So it's up to you, Paul. Will you have it to us by August?
I should hopefully have it long before that for you.
And I assume it's okay with the board members and with the president if we do it in August? Or do you want us to do it sooner?
It's fine with me.
I will let you guys know whenever I get the contract. It'll have to come out for review to make sure you guys are happy.
And then we can always do it by phone if we have to.
There's no urgency.
Okay. Okay, that settles that. Standing business. It's all yours.
Thank you. Turn the time over to Vice President Jackson for the Strategic Planning and Accreditation Steering Committee report.
I'm ashamed of myself. Well, we are going to brief you all on our work on pathways. And so that's why the chair of the English department is still here, Ryan Jones, and who chaired this committee this year as we move forward to make a recommendation to the college.
On a side note, what was that author's famous book?
Naked Lunch.
There you go.
Naked Lunch?
Naked Lunch.
Naked Lunch. I'm glad I didn't.
You've never heard it?
Oh, my gosh.
It doesn't involve calculus, I don't forget.
No calculus in it at all, as far as I remember. Don't be alarmed by the number of pages you're going to pass. I'll keep this quite brief. My name is Brian Jones. In January, Vice President Jackson asked several of us from the staff and the faculty to put together a group to look at pathways. Thank you. A program that the national program that comes out of the Community College Research Center at Columbia University, and its goal is to improve completion rates and retention rates in community colleges. It largely came out of this book, which is redesigning whether America's community colleges, which is a 2015 book. And what I have in front of you here, a couple of things. I'll walk through this with you. I wanted to kind of update you on what our process has been and tell you sort of what we came to, the conclusion that we came to. But we had a committee of folks from across the college, faculty and staff, who looked into this. The first thing we did, and this is attached to the packet that I just gave you, is we completed the Guided Pathways Essential Practices scale of adoption self-assessment. And I gave that to you so we can all have the results there. And we were very conservative in our answers to these questions, but basically what we wanted to do is look at what the folks at Guided Pathways officially thought we needed to be doing to be part of their program, and what we were already doing. So we started there. As I said, we were very conservative about it, and if there were things that parts of the college were doing that maybe the entire college was not, we didn't give ourselves credit for doing it until we're all doing it. But basically we found that we're doing an awful lot of what this program suggested other community colleges do. So after we completed the assessment, we requested some data from different parts of the college on retention and persistence, and we wanted to find out what kind of information we had about why students don't complete sometimes. And then I contacted a number of people from community colleges around Arizona that already are part of the Guided Pathways program, and I wanted to see what their experiences with it had been. And after doing that, I reported our findings to SPACY and to the Instructional Council and to the Faculty Association. So a few things that we found. First thing is that the main problem that Guided Pathways attempts to address is the problem of what they call the cafeteria-style community college, which is everybody comes in, there's a big list of classes, students take kind of classes without a lot of guidance, and they discover after a year or two that they haven't made much progress towards their degree. And what we found is that we kind of have a de facto pathway program because we've never done it. We have a fairly limited number of courses. We're very careful to offer courses that transfer. Many of our programs are carefully connected to business and industry already. And those of us who teach in general education, our classes are, we don't offer them really unless they transfer directly, and Arizona Transfer is really helpful with that. So we kind of, in some ways, kind of have this as an answer to a problem that we don't have. And Mr. Jackson mentioned this earlier, that we, for example, our completion rates in algebra and English composition are number one in the state. And I think that's because we have a lot of individual attention that we can give to students that maybe other places in the state kind of can't do. There might be other reasons for that as well. But one of the things we discovered also is that successful completion may not mean a degree from MPC. And I think that this is nationally a trend that we're moving away from a conversation about completion to a conversation about college success.
Right.
So, for example, we have a lot of high school students here who save a lot of money by taking classes with us, but then they maybe complete their degree somewhere else. We have a lot of students who come to us for employment reasons and take a couple of classes, learn a few things, and then go back to their jobs. So what counts as a successful completion here may not necessarily be degrees and certificates, although obviously we want to have as many degrees as we can. We also found that we're working hard to increase our support services. One of the things that's going to help students get through is to have better tutoring and writing centers and other kinds of things. And we've taken some major steps forward in the last year. One thing I did want to mention quickly is that one of the areas I mentioned before that we already do a lot of the things that this book recommends, and we do it very well. One of the things, one example of this, and I can talk about several, but I'll just talk about one. One example is what Guided Pathways called on-ramping, is building a relationship between a community college and high school students. And I put a couple of things on this for you to check out if you're interested in them. But there's a pile of research that says that one of the most effective things we can do to help someone finish college is to help them take a college class while they're still in high school. And we do that better than just about any community college that I know of. So we're really ahead of the curve in a lot of different ways. So the conclusion that I also wanted to mention that when I talked to community colleges around the state about Guided Pathways, the reaction was generally positive, but not all positive. And in fact, one particular community college, it's been a disaster. And to the credit of our administration here, the way that things have worked here, and the way things always work at FPC, is that the administration comes to the faculty and staff and says, let's figure out how to do this right. In other places, when the administration has tried to impose it, it's been a big mess. And that hasn't happened here. But several people from community colleges around the state are very willing to collaborate with us on building a strong program here. And several said, oh, we'd happily come up and visit you in the fall, and we can compare notes on how to do things. So I thought that was good. Long story short, I guess, the conclusion that we came to out of our group was that Guided Pathways itself is a proprietary organization that's kind of expensive, about $30,000 a year. And I don't think we need to do that. For a couple of reasons.
Because we already are.
I'm sorry?
Because we already are.
And we're not paying for it.
That's right, yeah.
So I have a question for you.
Yes.
So this program, it says, which attempts to improve retention and completion. So what wasn't or what isn't MPC doing that we felt that we could improve student services by going on just Guided Pathways? I'm just curious because it says, your report here says that we are doing it, but what aren't we doing that we felt like Guided Pathways could help us in that, whatever area that is?
I can give you another example. One of the things is student support services. So, for example, this last year we signed a contract with Tutor.com. We've had a pretty high level of participation with students, 24/7 online tutoring services in all kinds of different programs. I think that's already shown some results. We're doing other things in my area on the chair of the news department. And, we're doing a lot of things to try to build up our writing services to help students better. So that's one thing. A lot of it does have to do with academic advising and making sure that students have good advice about what kinds of, first of all, what goals they have and how to get to those goals, and also what kinds of courses that they need. Honestly, a lot of the reasons we find that students don't complete here don't have a lot to do with MPC. Meaning their economic reasons, their family reasons, things like that. There are things we can do to help with that, I think, and we're trying to do some of those things. We have a program coming up pretty soon to help with child care for the first time in a limited way. We're trying to grow that. It's interesting, in reading the stuff from Guided Pathways, one of their model organizations was a college in New York, and they said that it was a great success there, and they had found a way to pay full tuition for huge numbers of students, give them bus passes and child care, and it turns out if you do that, your graduation rates go up. So.
Go figure, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, there are other issues that are involved in this, and there are certainly things that we can do. But what I think what our group decided we should do is develop our own pathway program. There are a number of resources in the state that Vice President Jackson has been telling you about that are available to us, parts of organizations we already belong to. And the Community College Resource Center that does Guided Pathways makes most of their resources available for free. So what we're going to start doing in the fall is we're going to have a group of faculty staff and we're going to work from the ground up and start building a program that tries to identify specifically, Mr. Lashley, what those areas are where we can actually improve and build a program to fit us. He's going to try to bring you in.
I have some questions. So it says not occurring, and there's a few places where the scale of adoption at our college, and so how can we, I mean, do we need, should we be working on these elements of this assessment to help us maybe not necessarily join guided pathways, but help us get to that same level? Because it sounds like guided pathways is sort of the best practice in a lot of, in terms of retention and completion, and I think that we all agree that that's something we all want. But granted that our landscape is way different than where the school offered daycare and bus passes and all of that. And so is there currently a plan to address these not occurring?
Absolutely.
Okay.
In fact, this last Monday before last, we were down at Rio Salado. We were meeting with all the community colleges for the Arizona Student Success Center, which is the movement to have all the community colleges move towards guided pathways. And we're fortunate because Central Arizona College, along with Pima, helped write a grant to make this happen in the state of Arizona. We're only one of 16 states to have a Student Success Center. So they hired a director. That director will provide us with resources as we design our own pathway and moving forward. So I was fortunate to send the committee all the resources that came to us when we were there. One of the things is also a curriculum mapping, so students have a clear idea. Right now we have check sheets. There's a way we can do this interactively. There is a community college out of Wyoming, of all places, where our future vice president is coming from, who's doing this work right now. And so those connections that she already has, we were able to establish at this meeting. So as we move forward, we can get some help from people that already, in other words, we will not be recreating, or we won't be creating something new. We'll be able to go by the research that's already been established and really best practices.
So my question is why, like, under 1C, programs are clearly mapped out for students. Students know which courses they should take and in what sequence. Isn't that, shouldn't we already be offering that? I mean, because obviously we don't want them to be wandering through this cafeteria style. I mean, obviously we're not doing that, but shouldn't we be doing that already?
Okay, we do that.
Okay.
In certain programs, we do a better job with that than we do others. One of the things, though, that and now we have the two-year scheduling, of course, which is available in the catalog. But again, it's how we're presenting the information. Some of the best practices out there is really this mapping that actually looks at not only the sequence of courses, but what's the outcomes we want students to achieve. So when they do take a course or a program, what are those program outcomes? That way students know, when I leave here, these are the skills I'm going to have to move on to either to, you know, the workforce or to transfer. So there's tools out there that we're not utilizing. We really didn't have available to us. But now with this collaboration with the Air Community Colleges, we're here.
And we've talked with you a couple of times and done presentations with you over the last couple of years about the initiatives the Learning Management Committee recommended. Those all come straight from this document and from Guided Pathways. So, and those are focused more on communication, tracking students, doing things with students that, quite frankly, just a few years ago, community colleges said, that's not our business. You know, mandatory advising, making you go see someone every semester before you register for class, we don't do that. We let students go explore and sign up on their own, right? And what the Community College Research Center and others have discovered is that while exploration for some students is a great thing, for others it leads them off into a wilderness and they never come back.
Or they end up with degrees that are bachelor's in liberal studies?
There are 150 credits in that
degree. Yeah.
We have had students with in the past.
So one of the things that I think community colleges across the country have had to mentally adjust to is that this is a different generation of students with a different set of wants and needs than all of us who are now in our 50s trying to decide what people who are 40 years old, 30 years old, 20 years old, the way they learn and the way they want to be helped. And what community colleges, I think, have generally found is that some of the things that they thought were oppressive and that people would react negatively to, in fact, are the things that the students react very positively to. The direction and focus. And reminders of advisors that, yes, you need to go to class today.
So they didn't rebel.
They didn't rebel.
Not at all.
Not really. And I mean,
well, Mom told me to.
Yeah, I do think that that's interesting. I think that there has been a kind of historical change. And some of that may be economic.
Could it be part of, could it be a part of the culture in this area? This is a very rural community, and we have family structures that are much stronger than, say, New York. So if AOC wants to serve booze to her child, you know, that's okay. But don't see that here.
The
culture is so different.
That's right, very different.
Well, since AOC was brought up, now I'm
looking
at you.
In any case, we are definitely going to look at all of the, and again, I mentioned at the beginning of this, if the whole college wasn't doing it, we didn't put it on our form. That doesn't mean that large sections of the college weren't doing those things, but until we're all doing it, we were very conservative about our answers. I had a good long conversation with Dr. Clark this spring, and she comes from a situation where they did it wrong first, and then they backed away from it and went back to it and did it right, and so she's going to bring a lot of knowledge about that kind of stuff. And a lot of community colleges around the state have made mistakes that we can now learn from. And I think that we're in a really good position to kind of consolidate our efforts, I guess, and
save 30,000 a year.
And save 30,000 a year.
I'm just curious, what's it that school didn't have positive experience or whatever? What was their gripe with the?
So,
and you don't have to name the school.
Sure. So the problem was that the administration there had decided that any courses that weren't directly connected to work would have to be cut, which basically eliminates the distinction between a certificate and a degree. So they were cutting huge numbers of courses, and the person I talked to was the chair of their general education committee, and had been the chair of that committee for a dozen years and was resigning and looking for jobs elsewhere. And the faculty was in revolt and were, you know, looking to leave. And so clearly we don't want a situation where students take classes that don't serve their needs. But there is a difference between a degree and a certificate. And some of those courses that from the outside somebody might look at and say, well, what does this have to do with the job, are really about teaching people to think broadly and work out of their area of comfort. And lots of the most of the data that we get, anytime there's been polling data of employers in Arizona, one of the things that they say is they want people who can think and communicate. And so, you know, courses in like the sort of silly things that I teach, that may not seem immediately practical, although you do know who William Burroughs is if you teach what I teach. But what they're doing is they're teaching people to communicate and think and learn how to process information, and employers need that.
There have been a handful of institutions around the country, and this is true anytime there's a new initiative like this, who have used it, frankly, as an excuse to downsize their academic offerings.
Why would you do that?
Because you can't. Because you felt like you needed to, you could, vehicle to do that.
And if I may, just one example of how we've done the opposite. We're very careful to make sure our clients transfer. In my department, for example, we brought in two new literature courses in the last 2 years, women's literature and Native American literature. But we made sure first that they transferred to the university. And because of that, I think they have very good enrollment. They count as general education credits towards degrees. And students who may not wanted to take a British literature course are finding places that where they are interested. And so I actually think it's increasing our retention and completion because students are able to find classes that actually transfer that are more in line with what they wanted to do, what they're interested in. Are there other questions?
Okay. Thank you.
Good job.
In the interest of time, Mr. Chair, I will keep the President's report short, but there is one item that we have to resolve. As you know, the Arizona Community College Trustees Group is having a workshop and planning retreat September 6th through the 8th in Prescott. We are at the decision point. I had talked with the board about this at prior meetings. I need to know whether or not anyone from the board plans to attend. And I need to know in part because we need to make hotel reservations and the group that is putting this event together has to decide whether or not to cancel the event if they don't have enough attendees right now.
Hotel needs,
I guess. I can't
pistol. Yeah, but I can't make that dates.
I don't have any desire to.
You should have the agenda in your packet.
I saw the agenda, and I think anybody else? Nobody else wants to go by. I'll back up.
2.5 days for 5 classes?
Okay.
5 hours?
What I see, and I'm not trying to downplay the conference. It's really up to you as to whether or not you want to attend. But what I see is what looks like 5 hours of contact time, of official contact time. Now, there's a lot of off-the-books time, luncheons, you know, networking, interaction, informal interaction, all of that. It's probably very valuable.
That's why
I thought it would be valuable for me being new. But if nobody else is interested, then I guess I'll just wait until the next time around.
There may not be next time around.
Can I just go by myself?
Yeah. I'll need to attend as well if you want to attend. The group wants, if the board member's attending, the group wants the president to attend.
He has to chaperone you.
Not sure that's necessary, but.
No humor.
I read the agenda and how much actual education you get. I just don't see it as a good investment. Of my time, and my time is worthless.
I've been told that.
On you, or up to
you. So you don't necessarily need an answer right now.
Yes, he does.
By the end of the month, if you could just let Mr. Hensley know by the end of the month.
Which is a couple of days.
But what we had committed to as President's Group last week is that we all have board meetings over the next week or so, and we would raise this at our board meetings and gauge interest. So it sounds like what I can communicate to the president of Cochise, because his board member is organizing this, is that we have one maybe, and we'll know for sure by the end of the month.
You'll know by tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Informational needs for next meeting in August. Any on this end? This end?
I
go ahead.
Yes, I do have a question about this item. You're on item 8C, right?
8C.
Yes. And so we talked about the Winslow campus and the need for direction from the board. How is this going to come? Should it come from
a recommendation from staff or
planning?
What are we doing?
Well, there's a big plan. If you want, I can show it to you.
I have a copy.
You got a copy of the big folder?
I got an electronic copy. Yes.
It's 10 years old. And then when we were in Winslow, was it a month ago or two months ago, we discussed things that needed to be looked at for building, example, cosmetology, and then the possible need to extend the one building for nursing. And
or surgical technician.
Or surgery, correct. Mm-hmm. And that's something we need to discuss, and when we can possibly do it. And somebody
that's
has
my question. I mean, when
you can actually make a you can actually ask for it to be on the agenda in August, so we can discuss it and do planning.
Right. We can either do that in this meeting, or if you remember, we have a fall retreat. The schedule of that fall retreat is completely up to you. We can do it in August. We can do it in October. We can do it whenever you like.
Would you be happy if the administrative staff brings us a possible scenario for building cosmetology to August, and we can look at it? Or would you like to see further building for?
With a reminder that we're currently looking at hiring an architectural firm who will do a master plan, and we've already discussed the fact that Winslow needs to be right there. Because frankly, at a lot of our other locations, the master planning work that needs to be done is fairly minimal, but we know that there's significant work that needs to be done at White Mountain, and based on conversations with the board at Winslow.
When would that be completed?
As soon as we are able to hire an architect, and that might be sooner than we anticipate.
Based on emails we've been receiving doing
that. Yes. And so we have talked about the need to update the master facility plan, Winslow being the main focus, but then Winslow being the immediate next item. So if we were to schedule a fall retreat in probably September, we'd have hopefully some preliminaries, and that's what we would provide to the
architect.
The architect.
Would you be happy with that, or would you like it sooner?
This is in September, right?
That's in September.
So I'll trade you. I won't go to this. I'll come to the fall retreat if we're going to discuss.
So I'm hearing we need to look at a fall retreat in September.
Yes.
After the board meeting,
do Tuesdays work best?
It doesn't matter as long as it's after the board meeting. Tuesday's good with me.
So you can actually do both if you wanted to.
No, I'm going to forego this and focus more on
Winslow.
Wise choice.
And can we get an update from financial aid?
Yes. Okay. In August?
In July.
In
August.
When you say an update, are there specific?
All of the new programs, everything, and
going on?
Yeah, and is it messing with the financial aid of our students?
Right. Basically, can you work with Vice President Clark, who at that point will be?
So yes, Paul, you'll be sending us some dates for September.
Yes, I will.
Okay. Good one. Anything else on 8.C? Yes, late September.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Board reports, summary of current events in your areas, anything? Gentlemen?
Mr. Chair, yes. I'd like to give the board an update on a recent visit by Ms. Allison and Ms. Wilson to the Winslow City Council meeting. And this is again, as now we have it on the agenda quarterly for a report from MPC, and this time the report was presented by Ms. Wilson and Ms. Ellison. Ms. Wilson gave us an update on enrollment, gave us an update on the Talon. Am I pronouncing it?
Talon.
Talon.
Talon. Talon.
Yeah, I just pronounced it the way I speak in French. Dunno. And that it was very informative. It was more focused also on the Winslow campus as far as enrollment. Although we are flat, but you know, there's still hope. Ms. Allison did an outstanding job bringing us information about funding sources, and that included primary property tax and she talked about also the expenditure limitation and challenges you face with that. It's very informative. I've had compliments from members that were in the audience, compliments from some council members about your report, and I want to thank you for being there and presenting the information. So it was all about the budget and revenues and expenditures. Of course, the 90% of your expenditures is on your college assets, which is all staff.
70%.
So we appreciate your presence and look forward to more reports like this. And I bring it up because I thought it was very informative, and it was easy to understand, as I heard from a lot of people in the audience. And so I would encourage you to continue taking this information to other communities, not just Winslow.
That is the plan, is to get more information about our finances out to the communities. And although I think we've made one round with Mr. President Seth and Ms. Wilson, there's other things that we're planning to do to just get some more information out there. But thank you very much for your kind words and for the time that you gave us. That was really appreciated.
I also want to thank President for leading this effort and starting this program. If you want to call it program, but I think he initiated this, and I think it's working because now I want to say MPC has more exposure than Winslow.
That's the intent.
Yeah. And thank you for that.
Anyone, Mr. Chairman? The whole idea of the outreach is to go to the councils, to the Rotary Club, and so forth. It occurs to me that it might not be a bad idea when the next Winslow City Council meeting occurs, where this outreach happens, is to have it on the Winslow campus. In other words, because it's easy to sit in your nice warm chair in your surroundings, but if you want to learn about what's happening, and you really do want to learn, go to that location. I don't know how many of the council members, I know one, how often do they go to the Winslow campus? How often does the Sholo City Council go to the White Mountain campus? That would be kind of an interesting thing, is to say, we would like to meet at your city council meeting, but we want you to move your city council meeting to our turf. Just a thought. Anyway.
Anyone else?
I have one thing that I forgot earlier, Tom. I know Mr. Peaches does not have regular access to his email, so I provided him, just for your information, with paper copies of the last month's worth of my president's reports. I did not do that for the rest of you because I believe you have regular email access. If you want that, I can certainly do that, but I didn't want Mr. Peaches to be in a position where the rest of the board had information that he didn't have access to.
Okay. Announcement for the next meeting, August 20th.
Not July.
We're on vacation. So the next item is adjournment.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that the adjournment occur.
Post-haste.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. We're adjourned.
Shorter than ours.
Now we should drink less. Think of brown paper bag.
RWS or BWS has decided to be very difficult about the second.
What second interview?
When we, yeah.
Thank you.
They're questioning whether or not it was in the RFP. They want to know why it's not.